It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. A great panel this week, including Jerry Pournelle, Larry Magid, Cedric Ingrand, and Brian Brushwood. We're going to talk about all the week's tech news. But if I might, I'd like to also ask you, while you're watching TWiT, and it's going to take you just about the same amount of time as this TWiT did, I want you to fill out the TWiT survey, would you? TWiT.tv/survey, so we can better know you and what you are interested in on our network. TWiT.tv/survey. Start now. You might be over before we end this show. Let's get TWiT on the road.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 433, recorded November 24th, 2013. I'll take the gold pill. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TWIT1113. And by Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT11. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the week's tech news. And boy, every week I say this, but I'm sincere. This is a great panel this week. I'm really excited. Starting all the way over on my right here, we got Cedric Ingrand from France, from TF1. He's the host of Planet Cren, which is
absolutely
widescreen, big screen.
It means full screen.
Full screen.
And as I usually do, I brought wine when I bring wine when I come to the show. Sorry, I couldn't be in Paloma.
Now,
I'm having a wonderful, wonderful Côte du Rhône.
Oh, I love the Côte du Rhône. Those are my favorite.
I'll bring some over next time.
That or a Bordeaux?
I'm more of a Côte du Rhône guy.
All right. Them's fighting words. No, I'm just kidding. I'd never fight with a Frenchman over wine. You can't win. And it annoys the Frenchman. Were you in Japan recently? I seem to think that I saw pictures from Japan.
Yeah, PATH is good for that. I was in Japan a lot because there were two or three events. There was the PlayStation launch at Tokyo Game Show in late September. Then there was CTEC, which is like the Japanese CES, which is always fun because a third of the show is like devoted to components. So there's a lot to browse through. Last week was Interbe, the big, it's like the Japanese NAB, you know, the broadcast show. And we went there to also visit startups because there's actually now Japanese startups that are doing very much okay abroad.
That's interesting. We'll talk about that some more because that's counter to what one thinks about Japan. They're great at imitation. They are great at process, but not so great at innovation. So that, I'd love to hear more about that. But first, let's say hi to Brian Brushwood from NSFW.
Well, hello, Leo.
BB
from
Show.
From very chilly Texas. We're under a winter storm advisory. So
what?
If I lose my connection, it means a branch fell on a fiber optic cable somewhere.
Oh no!
It's like 33 degrees outside and raining all weekend.
In Austin,
yeah.
Wow.
Does it ever snow in Petaluma? You ever get any of the cold weather?
It snowed once back in '07, I think. Maybe it was '06, but no, not very often. Enough so that
it's so funny to me. Like the op thing, everyone tried to say it during the time and it felt too weird. But now that decade's behind us, I feel more comfortable saying the aughts.
You can say it, the aughts.
Yeah.
He was talking about 2007.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. No, that's right. Not 1907. I wasn't here then. We didn't move here till later. But yes, odd seven. That's Jerry Pournelle's cackling because he does remember odd seven.
Yeah, my problem is that I grew up odd seven meant odd seven.
Right.
I'm only 19, just now catching on to the fact that you meant 2007.
But it's another odd.
Exactly, Jerry.
Isn't that great? You've lived long enough to see two aughts.
or at least know of two aughts.
I didn't see, but knew of. I grew up thinking aught seven meant 1907. Yes, no, I'm not that old. I mean, I may be the old man of the sea, but I'm not quite that old.
Well, I absolutely not. Although I have to admit, it is get a little weird when you think about, you know, the songs, the oldies of today, which were from 1994, right, 20 years ago. And think of the oldies when I was a kid were actually from the 40s and the 50s. Right. It really kind of puts everything in perspective.
Yeah.
And also, let's say hi to Larry Magid from CBS Radio. It's great to have you as well. Boy, what a this is a panel. This is a panel of experts in every possible realm. Great to have you all. Thank you for joining us.
Wonderful to be here.
So, boy, I don't know where to start. I guess we could talk about something that bridges generations: game consoles. Mm. No,
I mean, you say that jokingly, but if there ever was a game console that can bridge generations, I mean, that's what Xbox One is banking on. You notice that, to the chagrin of gamers, they didn't cater to the hardcore gaming audience at E3. They pissed them off by saying, we're going to be the console that pretty much rules your living room. We're going to let you watch TV, talk to your friends via Skype, do exercises with Xbox One Fitness. And while that seemed like a bad strategy at the time in the bubble of hyper gamers, now that the Xbox is coming out, like the press seems to be generally very positive on those features.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that the Xbox, as it's coming out now, is kind of a continuation of what Gates's dream always was, that he was going to computerize your whole life, and that was the means of doing it, by taking over your entertainment center, all of it.
Right.
Yeah, that was wasn't that always Microsoft's slogan? It was written in the sidewalks in Redmond. A computer in every home running Microsoft software.
Right.
He didn't necessarily say running Microsoft software, but I remember.
I think that was the implication, though.
Well, it wasn't. It wasn't. When I first met Bill, it was at the Southern California Computer Club. We're meeting at Harvard School here in Studio City, and he was about 18 at the time. And his major concern was that people were pirating his paper tape copies of Basic. But even then, he was talking about a computer in every home and in every office and in every classroom.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't sound like much of a dream nowadays.
He got it.
But well, I guarantee you that in 1977 or thereabouts, that was a really far-out vision of the world.
Right. And it was before we envisioned a computer in every pocket, which, of course, is what we have today with the smartphone.
Computers everywhere. Yeah.
But clearly, the living room was always the battle. Remember, Intel tried to conquer the living room at I don't know how many CESs or Comdexes ago. It's always been the dream. And Dell came out with living room computers. Everybody came out with living room computers. Google still is. Yet Microsoft and Sony, in a sense, have done it through game consoles. Those are the living room computers that have actually caught on. And you're absolutely right that it's not just about gaming. It's about exercise. It's about conversation. It's about streaming video. The dream is that that becomes your set-top box, and maybe your only set-top box if Microsoft had its way.
Brian, have you used – have you been playing with – who has played – I have the Xbox One. You been playing with it?
No, Brian? I have not gotten hands-on with it, so I can only speculate. But one of the things I really did like about the things I've seen so far is the potential ubiquity of their method of handling Skype. Because there's such a high-resolution camera on the Xbox One, it has the ability to use software Zoom on different individuals in the room, and it recognizes essentially the skeleton of each individual. And if there's two people, it's like, all right, let me frame this so that both the people, the person in the foreground and in the background, are in there. And I was thinking about it, and you probably know more about this than me, Leo. Like, traditionally, for a telepresence setup, for something, for real-time conversations with one group of people in Tokyo and another group of people in New York, you're looking at $500 plus for one of those setups back in the day, right?
Oh, yeah. Tens of thousands of dollars on some in-room conferencing systems. So Skype is a big breakthrough. And I think you're right. I think this could actually be used in business for $500 as an in-room conferencing system. And it's good quality.
It certainly can right now, but shortly you will. I mean, in the setup we have here is obviously beyond what Xbox can do to have four different people on four different lines.
Right.
But I would not think that many years away that it will just be a part of what you've got and it will be built in and everybody can have a multi-line conference if that's what they want.
Yeah. You could do Google Hangout on Xbox if Google wanted to support that, and you could have up to 10 people having a conversation like this.
I'm very impressed overall by the Xbox One. It's better than I thought. When I've played with both now, and it's pretty clear to me that the PlayStation 4 is really a game machine. Mm-hmm. It wasn't merely the E3 demos. This really was what happened, is that Sony said, we're going for the gamer, and we're going to make the best possible game machine. And as gamers pointed out quickly, the specs are somewhat better on the Sony PlayStation 4. The Xbox One, Microsoft, kind of to people's surprise, at least in its original announcement, focused on what you could do with media. And you can talk to it. It's almost what I thought the Apple TV might be, where I can walk into the room, I can say, Xbox, turn on. It's always listening. It turns on. It also turns on my AV receiver, my cable box. It doesn't recognize my TV, but in most TVs, it would also turn on the TV. It then, the Kinect camera sees you, recognizes you, and logs you in. You can have up to six people with accounts. The camera recognition is quite good, and it's a little eerie to see a picture of me with my name in a bubble floating over my head.
So tell me this, Leo. Like, one of the things that intrigues me, and I haven't been hands-on with this, but I am shocked at how many things over the last year or two I have started to ask Siri to do on my iPhone rather than open myself.
Yeah.
Even though, like for example, call my wife, just because it takes less time than opening, finding, and that kind of thing. Do you find yourself immediately using the voice interface on the Xbox to find things like Netflix or any of the other?
It's a lot like Siri in the sense that it's seems like a great thing. And then in practice, it's not. Of course, my Kinect is sitting on my center channel speaker, so there's a lot of other stuff going on. But you can, in theory, say, Xbox, watch HBO. It knows where HBO is on my system and changes the channel to it.
Yeah.
That actually works. You could say, Xbox, pause, and it will pause what I'm watching. Xbox, rewind, Xbox, play. Those things do work.
Yeah.
And it always listening is a big difference between what Siri does and what the Xbox does. You don't have to press a button or do anything. It's like OK Google Now on the Moto X.
Yeah, I've got the Google Nexus 5. I don't know if you can't see it too well, which is running KitKat. And I find myself using it all the time. I mean, I'm surprised at how often I tell the phone what I want to do rather than type it in, especially when I'm driving, of course, when you really are not supposed to be touching it. But even at home or walking around, I'm finding voice commands to really, when they work and when you can depend on them, if you kind of can on KitKat and this phone, they're enormously helpful. When they don't work, like with Siri on my iPhone, it works maybe 70% of the time if I'm lucky.
And that's not enough, it seems to me.
Just enough failure rate to get me not to want to do it.
That's been my experience with Siri. It works just enough to make it intriguing, but it really isn't something you can rely on.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this is...
But that's this step. You will understand, I think, that if Jobs had not got sick and been dying for the last 2 years of his life, I think you might see something like Xbox on Apple now.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you. Although, didn't Apple try? I don't remember if it was under Steve. I think it wasn't the Pippin. Remember, they had a game. They had a wedge into the living room that did not take off.
But it wasn't good enough, and it wasn't anything that Jobs allowed on his return, basically. But I think that had he lived, he would be into that now.
Oh, I think that's what he was alluding to.
I think the lack of evolution of Apple TV. Apple TV never fulfilled its promise. Maybe it will someday, but it isn't even close. I actually like the Roku, which is you can buy them for $50 to start with, better than I like the Apple TV. I think they've actually nailed it.
You know, the Xbox One does much of what the Roku does. It does everything I need it to do, which is Netflix, Amazon. It does YouTube, which the Roku does not do. Mm-hmm. And it does, unfortunately, Xbox Music, not Pandora or any of the other music players. And all of that is voice commanded, which I think is an always on voice command. So if you're in the living room and you're talking to your TV, it seems to work pretty well. I think this is a very interesting first attempt. It's not clearly not done.
Oh, it's
Leo.
It's
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
So Leo, have you had the chance to try out any of the Xbox Live fitness programs? Because if you have an Xbox Live Gold account, which of course you have to pay for, you have there's P90X, there's Insanity, there's the Jillian what's her name thing. There's all of these that essentially grade you on your ability to follow along with the video and post your results. But more importantly, they're able to basically watch the skin tone of your body.
Isn't that amazing? I haven't tried those yet.
What your pulse rate
is. I'll do that tomorrow.
How would it do it with somebody 80 years old?
Well, there's only one way to find out, Jerry.
I'm going to. I already have a message for one of my subscribers who's a heart physician saying, go get one now.
Wow. Well, the only thing I've used is they have Connect Rivals, which is a sports program, and there's a beta of that. And the thing I do like, and so I've done a limited amount of it, but the thing I do like is the old Kinect on the Xbox 360, I had to move furniture because you have to get far back from it, or it wouldn't work. This one, it seems like you stand right in front of the TV. And
wider angle.
It's much much better. And the picture, I had to run and put on pants. The picture is so clear. I didn't expect that. You're laughing. Yeah. That is, well, but an issue that some raise is a privacy issue. Here I have in my living room a camera that's apparently always on and a microphone that's always on. Should I be concerned?
And the mental picture you have just generated in our head.
I did that for the NSA.
Let's move along. The next step here is really to find all these functions inside the TV. You were mentioning Apple TV. We are still to see what the last big thing that Steve Jobs worked on is going to turn out to be, which is an actual TV. I had someone on a podcast we do here, an ex-VP at Apple, the head of Apple Europe, saying, yeah, he didn't say, yeah, it's coming out, but he said, all need to wait and see
The problem I have with that, Cedric, is that TVs are expensive. So you spend $2,000 for a TV, which is what you'd pay for a nice big screen. 2 years from now, whatever that technology is that's built into any of these smart TVs is going to be old. Isn't it better to just spend $100 every couple of years to buy a new set-top box rather than having to buy a brand new screen?
Absolutely, except that, and Steve said that, it sucks to be, if you're a device, it sucks to be HDMI 1. You want to be there when you turn the TV on. You want to be the main interface. You want to be what sits between the user and all the experiences. And that's what none of these guys are really... I mean, it's... I wish Samsung would come out maybe next CES with better voice recognition and you know, they actually tell you what you need to watch based on what you've already watched. This needs to get way better, or it will leave some place for the Apples and Microsofts and Googles to actually come up with something.
But it has to be upgradable. You can't, you know, I don't know how often you guys replace your TV sets, but in my case, you know, I still got a 20-year-old Sony Trinitron in one of my rooms, but I don't replace my TV every couple of years the way I replace almost every other piece of technology that I use.
So I have a Samsung TV that has a breakout box. All the electronics are in the separate box.
That would work.
This TV also has a Skype camera. Skype is built into it and has a lot of smart software built into it. And in fact, even the remote control has a microphone in it and it takes voice commands. I don't find it anywhere near as sophisticated. And I think companies like Samsung and Panasonic, Vizio, LG, Sharp, all of these companies are not as good at software as they are at hardware, whereas Microsoft is a software company, I think, and Apple is a software company, and these guys are doing a better job, frankly.
This is the whole problem with building stuff into TVs. You know, one thing that, you know, the iPod got smaller and smaller from the, you know, from the mini to the nano to essentially invisible when it became part of your phone, but I don't feel like the same thing's going to happen with televisions, with mobile phones. We replace that every year or two. With televisions, there's usually a 7-year replacement cycle on there. So if you're going to tie yourself to a software platform and a hardware platform of whether it be Roku or Boxy or any of these things built into a display, I think it's a fool's errand. Consumers only want one thing, and that's for their monitors to display exquisitely awesome content, and that's it. Everything else should be external from the display.
I agree.
So how often do you think that they will upgrade the Xbox?
Well, that's only every 7 or 8 years, actually.
No, well, hardware, well, but software, major, it's a PC. I mean, let's be honest. This is a PC. It won't play a Blu-ray disc until...
PC.
Well, but,
I mean,
but it's...
Good heavens, Leo. This, that new Xbox is something you couldn't have bought in anything 3 years ago.
Oh, I agree, but it's... But it's still fundamentally a PC with a hard drive, with firmware, with a CPU, with an optical drive. And in fact, when you want to play a Blu-ray disc, it has a Blu-ray disc, thank God. When you want to play it, you have to download the Blu-ray player and install it, just like a PC. It very much feels like a PC. And so you are getting upgrades, but software upgrades all the time, I'm sure.
Well, and keep in mind, the original Xbox becomes... and...
Go ahead, Brian.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jerry.
No, you go ahead. I just had a thought.
I was just going to point out that the Xbox, especially the Xbox 360, we saw a number of revisions as over time. We saw the Xbox Live interface change to something closely resembling the formerly known as Metro interface. We saw the hardware get better with the Xbox Slim and the Black Xbox. In many ways, the Xbox One is not a revolution, but an iterative evolution of this unit. And the fact that the Xbox One defines the new platform moving forward, I guarantee you in 3 years, we're going to see a slimmer interface, a slimmer design for the whole thing. We're going to see software upgrades to the way you interact with it. It will be very PC-like in that everything will be iterative. And that if there's a complaint you have about the new Xbox One, it's that it's not a revolution, to which I say good. That means Microsoft understands that evolution is the answer, not revolution.
Go ahead,
Jerry. Always have.
Yeah.
That is both the pain and the glory of Microsoft. The thing that they've been criticized for the most is not being revolutionary.
Right.
And at the same time, over time, they have been revolutionary. Do you remember when Gates finally decided that the Internet was important and launched Internet Explorer? At that conference up in San Francisco.
Was that 95, 94, something like that?
Yeah, somewhere in there. And he said, you know, well, one thing about it is the price is right.
Free.
Were you there? I was there.
Not only was I there, but then I went on the site, which was our MSNBC show, and I said, sell your Netscape stock because Microsoft has given this sucker away.
Okay, yeah, well, I said the same thing.
And Andreessen saw it and came running down the hall, I'm told, and said, who the hell is this Leo Laporte guy? But I was right. We were right, weren't we? A year or two later, Netscape had to throw in the towel. They could not compete as a paid product.
That's what I said in the first Byte column that I did immediately after Bill's talk. It was clear once he turned his attention on it, he was going to influence the Internet in ways that nobody else ever had. But he was still alive and dreaming his company then. He's lost interest in that now. My question earlier was, how rapidly will the hardware make itself obsolete? Moore's law is continuing, and when you're already at 50x and you double to 100x and then you double to 200x, at what point can you just finally say, that's good enough, I don't ever need to upgrade the hardware anymore?
I think we've already seen that, which is the answer is 1080p. Keep in mind that when you go to the movie theater and you see a movie that's allegedly, you know, on a 4K projector, odds are it's in 2K, which is slightly more than 1080p. We don't notice that that's the same display that we have in our home computers or in our home box office or whatever, on our televisions. And what we're seeing is that increase in processor power is being used in ancillary ways that I think are fantastic for the home consumer. The fact that we have the ability to casually mention, hey, Xbox, bring up Netflix. I don't know where it is. Just find it. And it can do it. That's where that extra processor power is going. But you're absolutely right in as far as there are diminishing returns in the visual fidelity of the video games that we're seeing.
No, I wasn't.
Well, this is 4K ready. Everything's 4K ready, right?
No, I wasn't thinking the hardware of the screen. I'm talking about the Xbox itself. I am in complete agreement with all of you that you don't want to replace your TV very often, but replacing the set-top box is another story.
That's what's really odd about this category, Jerry, because I mean, yeah. The last Xbox was 8 years ago. The last PlayStation was what? Also 8 or 9 years
about
ago.
About 7 or 8. Yeah.
These devices have to last nearly a decade, and that's unheard of in the PC industry.
Well, they have, and that was why I was asking. At what point is it good enough? I mean, upgrading the software, I understand, but the upgrade of the my picture of the future was essentially told in the moat in God's eye and the moat around Murchison's eye with the computers they were using then, where Sally looked up at the ceiling and said, Finchcliff, tell me what our engagements are next week, and went on talking to her husband.
I can do that to the phone right now, right?
And it's getting there, and I'm saying it. My picture of where we're going is beyond that now, but still, we're almost getting there. And in describing that, you think the hardware is going to last long enough that you just leave it that way? At what point is the hardware good enough? Is what I'm really.
And then the software, Jerry, depends on whether the software evolves to the point where it challenges the hardware.
Always rise up to use up all the capabilities of the hardware. It will take them a while, but they'll always do it.
There is one factor that I don't think is being considered here, which is we live in an age where cloud computing alters the processing power of your conduit.
Right.
So in this way, as long as the Xbox One is fast enough to get your words to the cloud, as the cloud improves, your Xbox One magically improves.
That's an excellent
And we're entering a world where there is a huge difference between a 2-second response to a question and a 1/2-second response to a question. And that is the kind of thing that both bandwidth and the cloud will fix.
That's why mobile is so incredibly powerful. I mean, you take, again, all these little devices we have in our pocket. They're really not that powerful, and they don't have that much storage, but they have the cloud behind them. And that's Google's whole strategy, right? You're not really – the computer is really some other computer that you're accessing.
The ancient question we all started with back in the 80s. How much do you want to have home and it's yours, and how much would you trust in distributed computing? My big reputation was made on saying you want to do it at home. You don't want to trust you don't want to timeshare with somebody else.
Right, Jerry, probably like you. I assume you, like you, I got my start in timesharing. And, when I first started using a computer, it was a fairly dumb terminal with, at the time, a very powerful mainframe far away doing all the processing, doing all the storage. And in many ways, it feels like back to the future. That feels like the case.
There's today, a substantive difference, though, because today you have the processing power on both ends. You have the storage on both ends, and it's an interaction between two peers. That was a client-server situation, and I think that we have a really substantive difference in cloud computing today.
Well, with literally time-sharing the CPU,
my
Purnell's law was one user, at least one CPU.
And we have that now.
In 1980.
You have four CPUs on the cheapest computer out there.
Something.
Yeah.
I don't want to be... I love having my data available wherever I go. That's the cloud, and that's great. But I also don't want to find myself unable to do anything if my connection to the cloud is broken.
Well, that's the brilliant
thing. I want at least good enough in my hand that I can finish the scene I'm working on my book,
and that was
a big controversy on the
Xbox One. When they first announced it, they said always on internet was required, and people were furious. But in fact, it makes sense.
Can I throw a thought experiment out there? In what way are we all like our grandparents who didn't trust indoor plumbing or didn't trust electricity? Like there is an acquisition phase where you become comfortable with the idea that I'm now going to rely.
But every one of my grandparents not only trusted indoor plumbing, they wanted it real bad. And we didn't have it.
Well, and that's just it. I trust and want the cloud. I believe that comet strikes notwithstanding, we're going to have internet all the time. So why don't we just plan on having internet all the time? Like
you don't
to
get
me,
Santa Ana wind very often, do you?
Well, he's having them right now. Are you kidding? But I do. I think Brian's got a point that if we want to move forward, we're going to have to act as if. I think you can split the baby, though, Jerry. I think you can have, as you do on a Chromebook, sufficient functionality offline computing. You can get enough done that you don't feel like, well, this is a useless piece of metal. But the cloud makes a big difference in going forward. And so I can get my Gmail and my Chromebook and answer it offline, but ultimately I need to connect. Can we not assume that we're always going to be able to connect until the comet hits?
Well, but always being able to connect doesn't mean always being able to connect right now is what I'm saying.
No, I know. But if we can connect in the near time frame, that's adequate on a Chromebook, for instance.
Well,
yes and no. I mean, if it used to be I would go off to a coffee shop with my laptop and I'd work on Microsoft Word and or Excel and I'd be happy as a clam. Now, if I don't have connectivity, I can't work. I can't write. I can't broadcast. I really can't do anything useful these days.
And sometimes we breathe a sigh of relief and say, good, I'm going to go take a walk.
And that's the difference between you and me. I tend to tell stories, and I can go on telling my story when I'm unconnected to the rest. If I can get the story. Now, if I discover that my computer no longer knows what I wrote in Chapter 3.
Well, that would be bad.
I'm in bad shape.
Yeah, that would be bad. But that's not asking a lot. I think that's not...
Answer me this, and this is something I'd love to just hear from all you guys. Like, if you had to choose one utility to go out for, we'll say, 48 hours, would it be water, wastewater, electricity, or connectivity, internet? Like to me,
internet's
not even an option. No, what? No way, man.
Internet.
I'll go pee in the bushes I give up my
internet. Come on. No, internet is the least important of those four you just described.
Well, you're high as a kite, Leo.
But
you're crazy.
Without water and electricity, and if you're talking 48 hours, no country is more than about 6 meals away from a revolution, you know.
Jerry observed that in the Lucifer's Hammer that... we don't anymore have a reserve of food. We can't go more than about a week.
No, well, we have come down to just-in-time inventory on grocery. It used to be that in a grocery store, there was a back room with at least as much food back there as there is out on the shelves.
Not anymore.
Nowadays, you go into your local Ralph's, what you see is what they have. They don't have anything in the back room. You go up and you see they're out of this. You ask the manager, can you get me some more of this coffee cream? And he says next week or tomorrow or tonight at midnight.
But when the truck gets here. Really, Brian, you think that you would rather be without sewage, without water, without electricity, as long as you had internet connectivity?
He ain't been without sewage for very long, I guarantee you.
Dude, do you know what else runs on just-in-time inventory?
What, dude?
My brain, my liver, my heart, my lungs. The entire body runs on just-in-time inventory.
Well,
your heart pumps assuming that more red blood cells are coming in. That's okay.
Science,
that's what it means.
Don't have to be connected to me in order for it to work in your body.
Right, but the point is that we as a giant bacterial organism who have taken charge of this petri dish we call the Earth. We as a team rely deeply on interconnectivity. And to be honest, I would say if everybody had to start peeing in the bushes for a week or everybody or if an entire state
it's
was
not
cut
peeing,
off,
I'm worried about Mr. Brushwood.
okay, that's fine. My point is one of those would cause a riot and it's not peeing in the bushes. It's not the
internet.
I guarantee you.
Well, I'll turn off your water. We'll see how long you can last, Mr. Well,
turn off your electricity and see how long you can.
Well, assume he has a battery-powered device with internet. You can play your little Plants vs. Zombies, but you got to pee in the bushes. You can't drink any water. You don't have any lights at night. Come on, Brian.
I'll tell you what.
How much do you need to put gasoline? So,
all right, we're gonna take a break. Go to your corners. We'll come back with more.
I'm gonna achievement unlocked. I got in a fight over technology with Jerry Purnell. This is the best day of my life.
this is the first cage match, Twit. We're going to continue in just a moment. This is fun, and there's lots more to talk about. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix. If you're in the IT business, you know that being able to provide support is key. Remote access is just one part of the overall picture. And, of course, GoToAssist has always had the best remote access. You can assist somebody on a PC with a Mac, on a Mac with a PC, on a mobile device with a mobile device. You have complete flexibility, up to 8 sessions at once, unattended support. But there's more now. GoToAssist is the ultimate in cloud-based IT tools. You've got the remote support. You've got the service desk, which lets you keep track of what's going on, keep track of changes and incidents. Always know release management. You've got a knowledge center, that a branded knowledge center, white labeled, so you can put your brand on it. So they can go to the full self-service portal and get the information they need. Makes you look like a real support hero. Manage configurations. And then add the monitoring module, and you've got the ultimate situation. You put the GoToAssist crawler on your client network. You know all the hardware and software. You could set up a dashboard that'll let you know what's going on. You could be proactive, get alerts via instant message or SMS or email before there's a problem. I just think this is the ultimate in cloud-based toolkits. And if you are in IT or software support, you need to know about it. It could take you to the next level. It can make you a true support hero, and that's why we've arranged for a 30-day free trial. All you have to do is visit GoToAssist.com, use the promo code TWIT, and hey, here's good news. You don't have to give them a credit card anymore. Just our offer code TWIT is all that it takes. Make sure, do me a favor, check all three boxes. You want to try the remote support, you want to try the service desk, and you want to try the monitoring. All three boxes. You can select the number of technicians on your account, and then all I ask, click that link that says promo code and enter TWIT. Start that free trial right now. No credit card needed. At GoToAssist.com. If you're in the business of support, this is the tool you've been waiting for. We set up Russell with it. He's so excited. GoToAssist.com. Well, the fight between Xbox One and PlayStation 4 is going to be very interesting to watch. I have to... Whoa! Whoa! That doesn't look like a normal gun.
This is an HP laser jet.
Oh, man. He's going to dissolve you into a million particles, Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, I've got my Guinness and my flask. That's all I have to defend against you, sir.
That's probably sufficient. So, by the way, both sold a million in pre-orders in the first 24 hours. I thought the Xbox One was a laggard in pre-orders, but it seems like they were roughly equal.
Well, I mean, there was no way they were going to announce less than a million pre-orders after Sony said a million.
Right.
But keep in mind also that Xbox went worldwide. That was part of the thing. They ambitiously had a worldwide release with 13 different countries, whereas PlayStation was only like two. And place. I don't understand this tribalism where it's like, look, man.
Isn't that silly? Isn't it silly?
It really is to me. But then again, it's like, remember back what it's like to be 13 or 15 when you have limited resources. You can only convince your mom to buy one. And the one thing we dare not face is that we might possibly have made the wrong decision. So as a result, the moment it's locked in, and you're talking to a guy who vehemently told everyone that the TurboGrafx-16 was better than the Sega Genesis because he had a TurboGrafx-16. I understand where that comes from. It's that scarcity.
I'm very happy with the one, and I feel like I'm going to be able to do a demo with the one. We'll do this on Tuesday before you buy that. That will really impress because you can have a game going, fade it to the back, snap stuff around, all with your voice. It's a very fluid experience, and it's very intriguing to me.
Did they do a better job on Xbox than they did on Windows 8? I mean, is this their...
Oh, God, infinitely. In fact, that's the irony of this, is that this feels like a mature operating system. Windows 8 feels like an adolescent, Microsoft's going through a very awkward growing period.
It's ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't that ironic? The Xbox is in many ways the real success at Microsoft, I think.
Yeah, no, it's very ironic.
Yeah. Nokia shareholders have approved the Microsoft deal. It'll be interesting to see. I think they still have to get Finnish and U.S. regulatory approval. And here it is, the Nokia. Only two hardware devices running Windows RT, and this is one of them. This is the Nokia 2520 compared to the Microsoft Surface 2. Very similar in many ways. Mm-hmm. A real missing point on the 2520 is that the keyboard isn't ready yet, so you're basically buying a tablet.
That explains why they didn't send me a keyboard.
There's no keyboard.
I tried to review the thing without a keyboard.
Yeah, well, I think that's the native way. It's a tablet, right? It's supposed to be keyboard only, right?
With the Surface, I never use the Surface without the keyboard.
Right. Well, as soon as you get in the desktop...
probably not worth waiting for that, then.
It's not a bad tablet. If you want an RT tablet, it's reasonable. It's 1.35 pounds. It's okay.
My granddaughter's parents did not want her to have an iPad until just now. I can finally get her one for Christmas.
Why were they? How old is your granddaughter?
She's 13, and I don't get me started on that one. I would have bought one when she was 9 if they'd let me do it. But
I had somebody call me on the radio show and ask me, should I get my 1-year-old a Nexus or a iPad?
Yeah, well, I'm more on their side than this, but after all,
I would say a baby bottle.
She's their kid, not mine. She's only my grandchild. So I want to get, and she wants the Surface rather than an iPad.
Really?
Now, she thinks it's more versatile and she can get more done with it. Now, I'm going to get her what she wants, but I'd like commentary from you guys. If you had a 13-year-old daughter who's in the top of her classes and is obviously headed for, you know, university education, what would you get her when she was that age?
Well, I would find out what they're using at school and what her peers use. I mean, the advantage of the iPad isn't that it's a better device, but it's got a bigger ecosystem and it's heavily supported by a lot of schools. But actually, I think that the RT is not a bad device if you can get a keyboard, and there will be a keyboard for the Nokia
One. It's got Office on it.
Oh, it's got a keyboard. You know,
you can do productive things, but again, is the ecosystem ready for what she wants to do?
You know, if you're in middle school and you need to write reports and surf the internet and stuff, it seems like a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
You can add a keyboard to an iPad, but it's never really a natural fit.
Yeah, doesn't fit. Except for Harry McCracken, you know, Time Magazine, he writes all of his stories.
And Mike Elgin, too. They'll show up with their laptop, which is an iPad with a keyboard. And it's like, just show, you know, there's enough power, enough flexibility in these devices that they can do other things.
And don't ignore the Android tablets, Jerry. I mean, those are coming on. They're getting better. They're getting more popular. They're finally getting serious about tablet apps.
Yeah,
and
well, basically what you're telling me is that it's safe enough to let her make up her own mind.
She should,
on it.
Exactly.
That's a reasonable thing to have. Okay, that's what I'll get her.
Exactly. I mean, if she is expressing an opinion, I'd let her get what she wants. And then when she wants an iPad in 6 months, that's not my
problem. Actually surprised, though. I just assume kids
love apps. If she wants an iPad in 6 months, she can go to her other grandfather.
Yeah, exactly. let's see. What else? Microsoft. So sad because for a long time we've been talking when you start a show, some of our shows, you'll hear us do a plug for Winamp. Winamp was the original MP3 software. I loved it. Winamp really kicks the llama's butt. I never knew what that meant, but every time you installed it, it would say that. AOL bought Nullsoft, the creators of Winamp, now in 1999. So even that acquisition was 14 years ago. AOL announced this week it's shutting down Winamp forever. They paid $80 million for it in 1999. Now the interesting story, according to TechCrunch, is that Microsoft is saying, well, we'll take it.
Really? Well, I mean, there's value to the name. I mean, I'll tell you why, because I, a decade after it ceased to be relevant, continue to use it as my primary media.
It's a great program.
It's svelte, it's small, it's highly customizable. As a matter of fact, you know, my stage show, I get on stage and I used to have a freaking CD with tracks that I would have the sound guy play audio cues at various times, and they would screw up so often that I eventually went and decided to design my own system where I could run sound for my stage magic show while I was performing it. And I grabbed two keyless entry systems to cars. I spliced some leads to old keyboard buttons, attached them to the back of my shoes, and I used a plugin for Winamp that allowed me to hit play, pause, fade in advance, cue up everything. So to this very day, here we are, 2013, I still use Winamp as my primary method to run all the video and sound during my stage show. There's like 47 sound and visual cues throughout the whole show. But because it was so customizable, this program, this plugin was written by some guy in Russia. And I got it 10 years ago, sent him $50, and continue to use it to this very day. So I was really sad to see it shut down. But if they could keep that spirit of openness alive and just, you know, new boss, same as the old boss, that'd be fine by me. I'd be thrilled.
Winamp was created in 1996, you remember, by a guy named Justin Frankel. Mm-hmm. It was just him, although in the first year they had 15 million downloads. In 1996, that's a lot. Justin named his company Nullsoft in a parody of Microsoft. So it'll be very ironic if Microsoft picks up Winamp and Nullsoft. According to an article on Crave written by Bonnie Burton, who used to work at Nullsoft, the slogan Winamp, it really whips the llama's butt, is a line inspired by the schizophrenic singer-songwriter Wesley Willis. So it's not supposed to make any sense. You know who that is?
Oh, I know who Wesley Willis is. Rock and Roll McDonald's. Dude, Chad will pull up Rock and Roll McDonald's in 2 seconds. He used to have, like in the early 2000s, I mean, he was genuinely schizophrenic. And if you looked, he had a callus on the middle of his forehead.
Yeah.
Because as a way to honor his fans, he would headbutt them. He would be all like, nice. He'd be like, yeah, no.
Just what I want for my favorite rock and roll performer. Headbutt me. So Winamp, I think, really was kind of the little scrappy little program that could. We all used it in the late 90s. Then AOL bought it. Frankel survived for a little while. But remember, when AOL, are we listening now to Willis? Is this Rock and Roll
I'm really
McDonald's?
Quite worried that there will be something we have to bleep.
We will not use a bleep. That's the whole song?
McDonald's. Pretty much. McDonald's will make you fat. McDonald's will have to... Oh, dude.
Do you remember in 1999 when AOL bought Nullsoft that Frankel released Nutella, GNU-tella, the open source peer-to-peer file sharing network that competed with Napster, just what AOL was hoping they would do.
Which was a big thing at the time. Like, Nutella was, I remember, it was technically very, very adept compared to, you know, eMule and the other stuff that was around at the time. That was actually before BitTorrent. So, well, so we're old, I guess.
But, you know, in the modern world where every device comes with a media player, every operating system has a media player, I mean, do we really, I mean, except for those specialized cases like Brian, where you're, you know, using, literally doing magic tricks with your technology there. Does the average person really need a choice of media players?
No, it makes sense. And, you know, Winamp kind of jumped the shark under AOL. By the version 3, it really was not the little fun. I got it because of the visualizations. I remember in 1999, December 31st, 1999, I was responsible for the music for our Millennium New Year's Eve party. Of course, I used Winamp to play it back on a PC. I had a projector, projected the Winamp visualizations on the wall as we listened. And by the way, there was no portable music player. It was a tower PC playing this thing back. So there's some real memories with Winamp, and some I don't know. I think it's not the same Winamp. It hasn't been for years.
Well, how could it be?
Yeah, yeah.
Moore's law is inexorable.
Yeah. So
now, I'm still using an accounting system I wrote in
you still use that
basic in 1985, but my bookkeeping needs have not changed since then.
Yeah, that's true. Bookkeeping probably hasn't changed since the 19th century, but MP3 players have evolved.
Well, I wrote my bookkeeping system quite deliberately to look exactly like what you get in second year accounting at UCLA. I went down there and bought the textbooks because I figured if I'm going to be audited by these IRS guys, that's what they're going to have done, is gone to college and taken accounting classes. So I want my books to look just like what they're used to. And it's worked. I've been audited 7 times, and I always got money back before when it was over. So.
Wow. Yeah, well, and as Patterson pointed out in the chat room, who of us has unchanged since 1999? Justin Frankel tweeted, "Don't worry about Mike the Llama. He is safe in his native habitat." So if you were worried. Anyway.
One footnote to the legacy of Winamp.
I don't advise you to kick a llama's butt. They can be very unhappy. They are of the camel factor.
They will spit at you.
And they are quite... And not only will they spit at you, they are very accurate in the way they spit.
What is this, Chad?
I can give you absolutely...
Same thing. I just thought you might want a music for the llama. This is the reprise of Rock and Roll McDonald's.
Rock and Roll McDonald's, the dancing llama.
You know, one footnote that I think is of big significance, especially to your network, Leo, is the fact that Winamp was among the leaders in distribution with the Shoutcast technology.
That's right.
I remember tuning
we use
in
Shoutcast.
To Shoutcast.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, before there was Justin TV, before there was Ustream, there was Shoutcast, a way to... And I remember on 9/11 turning on Winamp and tuning into one of the Shoutcast distributed feeds of the police radio back in the day.
So Shoutcast, which was somewhat proprietary, is an MP3 streamer. We use actually Icecast, which is the open source version of Shoutcast. Shoutcast will also be shut down by AOL. However, if Microsoft acquires it, that might be this might be a good reason for Microsoft to acquire Shoutcast. There are still
they'll put it in Xbox One. Yeah. And say,
I'll take it.
You used to have to pay money to stream. You know, if you wanted to stream something from your web server, you had to pay a fee.
Only if you play music.
No, but I mean, no, for the streaming technology, I think Real would charge you a license.
Oh, Real would? Oh, yeah. And that's why this was a revolution. Absolutely.
On my WordPress blog, I've got a free streaming app that just shows up. I just
and MP3 streaming is very easy to play back. iTunes supports MP3 streams, Shoutcast and Icecast. So, I mean, it's a very straightforward kind of stream. So, I hope it survives. I think that's. Did you see the Scroogled shirts, by the way, the Microsoft store?
Oh, boy.
What the hell?
This is so bad. Those are some bold claims. So unexpected from Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft is, well, if something tasteful, usually.
Not this.
Not hip. This is like listening to Fox News talk about Obama. Like, is he really American? I mean, look at the Scroogled website. It's like, is Gmail violating wiretap laws? Shit, please. they're trying to drum up stuff about the old you know Google Street Wi-Fi thing, which had no legs. This is, I mean, it's tasteless, really.
You know who and did? It, you it, don't know the name
coming from. Soft.
You probably don't know the name, but the guy behind this is named Mark Penn. He was his background is not in software, is in politics. He was Hillary Clinton's pollster, in fact, famously fired during the 2008 primaries because he was doing such a crappy job. And I think this is exactly the same kind of negative campaigning you see in politics. The problem, just like in politics, it kind of can rub off on you. I mean, when they say, is Google breaking wiretap laws when they read your Gmail, they conveniently ignore the fact that Hotmail also reads your mail. It has to, otherwise
every mail. If you have spam filters, a machine reads your mail. It's as simple
that's how
as
it
that.
Works.
Now, if it does it for spam or for ads, it's a different thing. But your email is being read by machines all along the way. Yeah. Deal with it.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Well, plus, also like that's and people are like, you know, oh well. In what situation would it be read by a human? The answer is when they get a subpoena, which is exactly when it would be read by a human, no matter who's providing
no
it,
matter
whether it's being
it.
Hosted or never read by a computer.
And the whole purpose of webmail is to archive your mail so that you can get access to it anytime you want. That's what I love about Gmail and Hotmail and Yahoo Mail. And the government, given the right papers, can get access to it anytime it wants. So if you really want to protect your privacy, don't use any kind of archival mail, whether it's
don't use the internet.
Microsoft. Don't use the internet while you're at it.
Yeah. You might want to get an outhouse while you're at it.
Larry,
you
guys seem to be a little naive. Do you really think that everybody gets those papers all the time?
No. I mean, the national security letters? No, they're really relatively few.
In fact, Apple says it's never received one.
There are very few of them. I mean, Microsoft and Facebook and Google have all put out numbers like 0 to 1,000.
Yeah,
no, there aren't that many national security letters, but they exist.
The obvious thing is if you don't want it broadcast, don't put it out on the internet at all.
Right.
The notion that you can have private email and it's going to stay private is just, it isn't. It won't.
Yeah. No. You're right.
Well,
it's just like, you know, people didn't use U.S. mail back in the old days if they had something extremely private to share.
Right.
I mean, you know, you walk down the room with a, turn on the shower and whisper. I don't know. I've never done it, but I know there are ways because I've seen James Bond movies and read your books.
It's interesting. I mean, I think one of the reasons that kids use Snapchat is because they believe, wrongly,
illusion.
As it turns out, but they believe that the pictures that are shared on Snapchat dissolve after 30 seconds or whatever and disappear completely. And I think that's the reason Snapchat's so popular. So there
but
is
that's for social reasons, Leo. That's not from the government. That's to protect them from your parents, from your counselors 5 years from now, from your friends 2 days from now, the ephemeral nature. But I think from a
it's the same instinct though, isn't it? To say, I don't want anybody to see this government or parents. It's the same thing.
Sure.
But I want to archive my mail.
If you're a teenager, the immediate danger is your parents, not the NSA.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
But I think the same desire for privacy. Yes?
Well, the difference
I would
is,
have thought that the real danger is not necessarily the NSA, because if you're doing things that really interest them, you've got other problems too. I would think it's the HR manager, the human resources manager of the company you're thinking of applying a job to in 5 years, that you need to worry about what you're doing on the internet now.
I think kids are aware of that too. I mean, I know kids, high school kids, who use phony names or on Facebook, or names that wouldn't be searchable on Facebook, because they know that they don't want to use their real name because they know that they're going to be applying to colleges and looking for work.
Jerry, you're old enough to remember Joe McCarthy, and I'm old enough to remember J. Edgar Hoover. So I don't put it past our government at some point now or in the future to want to go back and do an enormous amount of data gathering. And
this is a first.
That's exactly
this is the first time I can remember that Jerry has said, I'm not worried about the government. And Larry says, I am worried about the government.
I know, it's ironic.
Guys, are you confused? Should I flip the cameras here?
No. I was an activist during the Nixon administration.
This is something that we have touched on in previous twits, but one of the things that I honestly think you're going to see in the next decade is a case where retroactively facial recognition software is able to place certain prominent figures at certain events.
Not only that, but it will be available on your telephone. Yep. Moore's law is inexorable.
Yeah.
And doubling every, you know, the old ecology thing about in 30 days, the pond is going to be so full of fish it'll all die. So how big was it was on the 29th day?
Right.
I mean, exponentials are exponentials, and most people don't seem to appreciate that. You know,
we're all on the wrong side of the hockey stick.
This brings up a new story. I don't know if it's on your roundup, Leo, but Chad, if you would bring up the second story on Larry's World, Twitter improves encryption against NSA and other snoops. This whole perfect forward security is all about this, is to try to create a security system that protects you not now, but sometime in the future,
right,
so that your encryption doesn't suddenly become like Snapchat. The encryption goes away instead of the data, which is the case with secure socket layer. So obviously Twitter picked up on that. Google has picked up
Google's
on that.
Google's been doing that too.
We need to protect ourselves going forward, not just currently with our data.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, Jerry and I agree on something.
Complete agreement.
Wow.
The Moore's law is quite real, and it's good for another 10 years anyway.
We're close to the end of that? I think Gordon Moore thought we were getting close to the end of that.
Well, he's been thinking that for about 5 years, but...
Yeah.
The law being that processors double in the number of transistors every 18 months.
Well, that was the way he formulated it, but it has turned out to mean that every year and a half, the machines double in power. I mean, that's kind of basic.
That's the
effect of it. Now, his mechanism, which was that you can get more and more transistors onto a disk, was fine during those times, but that technology changes, and we don't know what will replace it. I'm not sanguine about it will run when it will run out. I'm not up there with Werner, my friend Werner Venge, who figures that we're eventually going to get things that are so good that we can't even possibly predict it, and we'll have this crazy period in which nobody knows anything. I don't think it'll get to that.
I think we're already there, Jerry.
Yeah, watch Fox.
I think we're real close. I think so many things came out this holiday season that we can't even keep track of them. Next year's going to double. Next year after that's going to double. Forget it. It's over.
Well, no.
I'm going to get a farm.
Don't you think that the hardware has... That was the point I was trying to raise earlier. At some point, hardware really does it get good enough to the point that it's going to take the software guys a long time to catch up with it.
I have actually, it's interesting, Jerry, because I find hardware pretty uninteresting these days. I mean, you know, I get a new tablet,
it's commoditized.
A new computer.
Completely commoditized.
It doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter.
These days. Yeah. So maybe that'll change. Maybe a year from now, some device will come out that's going to blow me away. But it hasn't happened in the last year that I can think of.
The issue really is software.
Yeah. Maybe the wearables.
I mean, yes and no. I don't think we're looking at a plateauing of hardware in general. What we're looking at is the gap that comes before the next revolutionary leap. The moment we can get cochlear implants, that all of a sudden you throw away your iPod earbuds forever because now you could just stream music directly into your brain. That'll be a significant hardware advance. Yeah. The same thing with heads up displays in your eyes at all time. I mean. Yeah. I mean, this stuff is not the stuff of science fiction anymore. It's coming down the pike. And,
well, the wearables are going to be the big deal.
Yeah, it sure makes it hard to write that kind of story nowadays. I wrote that stuff in the 80s, and I had mental implant. You know, and, the Oath of Fealty was a novel about people who could communicate with their computers. And
is it tougher to write sci-fi today? Because we're living in the future.
Have you guys seen
many of my classic stories in the 80s took place now.
Right.
In the teens. And
2001 took place 12 years ago.
I had asteroid colonies and I had moon mines and all of which we could have had. The technology's there. We just didn't have the will to do it. But
well, we'll get the will when we start running out of stuff.
Well, we're already running out of energy.
I know. We'll get the will. Unless you run out of stuff, you can't build a rocket.
The problem is you got a race between having investment funds and having to pay for entitlements.
Right.
As long as the entitlements that you have to pay for are low enough that there's still a surplus left over that you can invest to keep the revolution going, you're all right. The problem is that left to themselves, the entitlements will eat the whole budget. And more than that, Purnell's law of bureaucracy will take over the research establishments. Right now, an awful lot of so-called research really just goes to cubicle workers who sort of read each other's minutes. They don't contribute anything into the research anymore, and you can't fire them.
You want to talk about these augmented reality glasses, Brian? I see the video that you sent along in the chat room.
Yeah, well, and that's on that topic. Somebody's putting together for anyone who thinks this is still far off in the future in science fiction. You know, this guy. There's a video that came out this week of a guy who took a couple of cameras, stuck them to the front of an Oculus Rift, and basically set it up so that you could perceive the world around you through your Oculus Rift. It's a video image comes into the cameras. Cameras go to the screens in front of your eyeballs and you see the world. Then you click a button and all of a sudden you have augmented reality where you're able to reach forward and interact with heads up display stuff.
You've seen Jerry Ellsworth's Cast AR. This looks a lot like Cast AR, which is very close to happening. Jerry was an engineer at Valve, was developing it for the Steam Box. Valve fired her and her team. And interestingly enough, she was able to walk into Gabe Newell and say, well, can we take the glasses with us? And he said, yeah, what the hell? And so they're working. Yeah, no kidding. How often does that happen? And I don't know. They had an Indiegogo? Let me see if I could find Cast AR. No, it was Kickstarter. They had a Kickstarter. They raised $1 million.
Wow.
And she came in and demoed it. And that's exactly what this is. What's interesting is they're heads up. So unlike the Oculus Rift, where you really wouldn't see anything if they failed, you'd walk into a tree. These are actually glasses you're seeing through, and then projected ahead of them is on a screen is so it's a little, I guess it's a little different in the sense that you're not walking around looking at an augmented world, but you could play a 3D game and so forth. And she says that they do have the same kind of capability as one of the things that they'd like to do.
How close are we to a world where all of this is built in, you know, to a unit small enough to fit inside your eye?
I just want a cerebral cortex implant. I'm waiting.
Yes.
Right here. I will be the first.
This from the same guy who was just mocking me for being severed from the internet before I jumped in a bush.
No, I'm not saying that. I still want a toilet and hot and cold running water. I mean, I'm not giving up that.
That's all just meat space. Who cares?
But I want it. I want ocular implants or cochlear implants. I want it. Just put it all in here. And,
if your toilet can be connected to the internet,
you want to become an electronic mess.
Yes. Yeah. I figure I don't have much more left anyway. Why not? I'd love to be the guinea pig for it.
And your toilet can have its own IP address.
No, actually, my toilet does. We're installing one of those Toto washlets.
The Toto,
It wakes up. It sees you. It says hello.
And it opens up. They have a webcam.
What's so great about reality, man? We're all rock stars and geniuses. We just don't have the right equipment. Oh, I'm sorry. You lost the genetic lottery. You were born with a slower body or whatever.
Forget that.
That doesn't count when you go virtual. I want to go post-physical as fast as I possibly can.
Does it intrigue you that John Carmack is going to Oculus?
Yeah, dude. I wonder how, what's funny is this is what a dork I am, is the first thing I said was, it was like, oh, I hope he doesn't quit Armadillo Aerospace because I want to see him make rockets.
Well, he has, but that's
has he?
Yeah, his wife has basically told him he doesn't get to play with it and it says so much anymore.
Oh, that's too bad. Jerry is a big proponent of private space.
I'm not so sure. I mean, Armadillo did some good stuff, but he was so fascinated with monopropellants that one of the problems with monopropellants is the other name for them is high explosives.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm fascinated with those, too. Let's blow something up.
But, yeah, well, but not you.
We're gonna
Before we do, Leo, Jerry, are you a believer in like would you put your money on SpaceX? Because I mean, if you're into private space exploration,
well, you gotta understand, I'm not totally disinterested. My son is a vice president of Nanorak. And they just launched more satellites in one day than anybody else ever has. They have the world record for it now. They're cube satellites. They're 10-centimeter cubes. And if you want something put into space, Nanorak will get it there for you. They can do it. They buy leftover launch capability from other people, and they're doing it wonderfully. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Elon's, but I'm also think X-Corps has got some pretty good stuff going too. Now, there's a lot going in private space, and fortunately, at the moment, the regulatory heat is not so bad that they can't do it. One of the big problems with innovation now is that, well, it's like the problem with why don't we have better roads? We just spent $900 billion supposedly on shovel-ready construction projects to give us better roads and bridges, only we don't know where any of it went. But I can tell you where it went. It went into environmental impact statements.
Which isn't a road at all.
You can't drive on an environmental impact statement.
Well, they're pretty, you know, they're thick enough. You might.
And the problem, and as long as space doesn't get so overregulated as all that, yeah, we'll still get there. And if we can get to space, you can solve the energy problem. But it's a close deal in this world between the demand for entitlements and the needs for research and development.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more. Jerry Pournelle is here, jerrypournelle.com, the great science fiction author, raconteur, and the guy who really started user-focused tech journalism with his Chaos Manor column in Byte Magazine and now online at chaosmanor.com. Larry Maggott is here, CBS Radio, and Larry's World is a great place to go to find out what he's up to. We've got Cedric Ingrand, who hasn't been able to get a word in edgewise. You've been very good.
I'm listening to Jerry.
He is the technology editor. Sorry, right? No, that's fine, really. Cedric will pipe in, believe me. LCR.fr if you want to see Plenacren. And it's always good to see you. When are you coming to the U.S.?
Well, for CES, that's for sure.
All right, well, we'll see you in January then.
Yeah.
And Brian Brushwood from NSFW, and I've just learned that you will be joining us for our New Year's Eve party, Brian.
Oh, is that official?
Oh, I knew maybe not.
That was being talked about in the works.
I think we're negotiating with Bonnie to make it official.
There you go. In other words, you tipped your hand, my friend, and I get to name my price.
You name your price. You will be here. I want you here. Right. You know, we're going to have so much fun. We have a 24-hour broadcast we're going to do on New Year's Eve. I decided we're such a global network. Why not celebrate New Year's in every time zone? So we're going to start at 4 a.m. Pacific Time New Year's Eve and go to 4 a.m. Pacific Time New Year's Day. And in those 24 hours, I think we're going to have 26 or 27 countdowns to midnight. And we're going to welcome 2014 27 times. Hmm. Wow.
Leo, have you thought to have like a representative from each time zone call in over Skype?
Yes, on Skype. That's what we're doing.
Somebody from Iceland.
Yes, we're looking for people all over the world. twit.tv/NYE to book your time zone. You know, it's going to be easy to do France. It's going to be a little harder to do Papua New Guinea. But we're hoping to get somebody in every one of those times.
I'll tell you what, just somebody pretend to be from there. And then you just
I'm going to have a glass of champagne 27 times.
Wow, that'll be quite a
We're going to have an ongoing D&D game, live D&D, live Dungeons & Dragons throughout the 24 hours. There's all the time zones. We've got Darwin. We don't have Irkutsk. We're looking
Irkutsk. Yes, that'll do it.
I don't know what Sri Jawa Wardenpura is, but if we could find somebody there, we'd like to do that.
One word, Twit fans, green screen.
Why did Kathmandu start 45 minutes after the hour? Look at that.
There's 27 time zones.
Wow.
So I'm told Kabul has its own. Sri Jawa Wardenpura has its own. Kathmandu has its own.
Of course, I'm in Novosibirsk right now.
we need a caller from Minsk, so be the one. And anyway, that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. And you're all invited, and I know, Brian, we want to get a little magic if we can. Maybe a little fire eating, something going on here. It's going to be fun.
It would be an honor.
Yeah, a lot of people coming up for it. I think we're going to have music. What I've done is it's 24 hours. I've got three producers doing each 8 hours. And they're competing. I'm hoping they're going to compete against one another for the best 8 hours, right?
From 9 to midnight, it's going to be the best.
See? That's what we want. And one of the producers called you, see? So now that ups the ante because Karsten called Brian. What are you going to do, Chad?
I'll get
to
Petaluma International Airport? Will there be a limo service?
There'll be limo service from the Petaluma International
Airport.
Anyone
I book gets free limo service.
I want so bad to believe there's going to be like 4 or 5 hours where it's just a guy in a pretend boat green screen with an ocean in the background. Be like, 3, 2, 1, yay.
Well, you're the big guy who wants the virtual world.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's good enough for me. Just make me believe you're out there.
I'm really looking forward to this. We've been planning this for 4 years.
Wow,
years in the making.
It may take you that long to recover from it, too.
Yeah, it'll be another 4 years before I wake up, if ever. Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Shutterstock.com, a great place to get royalty-free artwork, photos, illustrations, vectors, and videos. Currently, they update it all the time, 31,278,274 royalty-free stock images. They upload as many as 20,000 new images every day. In fact, this week alone, 180,000 new stock images were uploaded to Shutterstock.com. That means you can find something for everything. If you do a publication, a menu, if you do videos, if you need great royalty-free images for your work, Shutterstock has some of the best professional photographers and artists. You could choose individual image packs or a monthly subscription for the best deal. I love the search engine, but before you use a search engine, I invite you to make a free account. No credit card needed, because then you can create light boxes. And this is really, really nice. The light boxes allow you to save images into a light box that you can look at any time. You can share with others. That is really nice. Here's the Gray Matters light box, which is a bunch of grayscale photography. Just really beautiful stuff. This Shutterstock is quite amazing. And even if you don't end up buying these images, just having them there for inspiration is so wonderful. You can also share them, by the way, with other people. They have a color picker that lets you choose a palette. So you can say, you know, my website needs these colors. It's just the search engine is super powerful. They're also truly international, multilingual customer service in more than a dozen countries, full time throughout the week. So, you know, wherever you are, you're going to love Shutterstock. Now, once you create the lightbox, please do that. It's absolutely free. If you decide to buy, all I ask is you use our offer code TWIT1113 and you'll get 25% off your new account. 25% off. That's pretty amazing. The other reason to create an account is they've got free images every week, which you can get if you're an account holder. Don't forget to click the footage tab at the Shutterstock page to take a look at some of the videos there as well. The beautiful, beautiful videos. You know, it's just nice to have. Happy Thanksgiving. This is a grungy Happy Thanksgiving video.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's something for everybody.
Yeah, man, I want to say happy Thanksgiving, but, I mean, I don't want to look like I care or nothing.
Right.
Maybe, like, rusted.
Right, rustic.
Maybe, like, kind of moldy.
I want it rustic, man.
I guess.
Shutterstock.com, we thank them so much for their support and for their images. We have the 25-image-a-day subscription. It's very, very helpful for us. So, we didn't mention Apple once in this show. Let's think. Samsung gets another big win, $290 million more in damages in their ongoing patent lawsuits against Apple. The total award now is getting close to $1 billion, $930 million for patent infringement. At some point, you know, at first I thought, well, a couple hundred million here, a couple hundred million there. Samsung can afford it. It's the price of doing business. You get to $1 billion, it's starting to hurt a little bit, yeah?
Well, we had these arguments when the first trial went on, and it was like, if Samsung actually infringed all the patents that Apple says it did, well, then $1 billion is that much saved in R&D. So if it did it, very deliberately, and it knew what it could afford. So, but I mean, it's funny now that we're talking about phones that have been around for like 3 years. So it sounds like a very old story, except there might be a new lawsuit coming up sometime this year.
I don't feel like, I mean, I don't know, I'm torn on this. First of all, I hate to see companies litigate instead of innovate.
Right.
I completely understand that a company has the right and duty, perhaps even to fiduciary duty, to protect its intellectual property. So I'm just torn on this. I don't.
Well, so let's say it this way. Let's say that Apple definitely came in and was like a lightning strike. They were an earthquake to the environment. They fundamentally altered what people expected from their smartphone. And Samsung had to make a call. We can either sit here dumbstruck with our jaws hitting the floor and watch Apple run away with it, or we can, you know, quote unquote, be inspired by what they've realized and run forward. And it's one of those self-correcting things. If what they had done amounted to nothing, if it turned out that the secret wasn't in icons and all the things that we associate with smartphones now, then they wouldn't have been successful and Apple wouldn't have bothered to sue them because there was no money to be had. But the fact that clearly the ecosystem wanted, you know, apps and you know, again, those things that they're suing about, indicate, you know, and Samsung made a lot of money. So it's almost like they're paying a retroactive licensing fee.
It is. But do you agree with Apple's attorneys? Apparently the jury did, who argued that Samsung's patent infringement significantly harmed Apple.
You know,
Apple's attorneys said Apple can never get back to where it should have been in 2010. No. Is that true?
I think that Google's innovation harmed Apple. I mean, Google coming up with Android fairly quickly on the heels of iOS and licensing it to a lot of companies, including Samsung. And Samsung's clever exploitation of Android hurt Apple and caused Apple to lose market share. But, you know, when you look at some of these patent fights, they're arguing over rounded corners and the way icons bounce around the screen. These are not fundamental issues. These are marginal things about what makes the Samsung phones good or not good. And I think that fundamentally just is, you know, people steal from each other. Yeah, maybe Samsung owes Apple a few hundred million bucks, but the bottom line is that we had to move forward. We had to go beyond the BlackBerry as a smartphone interface. And even if you look at Windows, nobody's going to sue Microsoft over Windows Phone or over their interface. But even it fundamentally is the same concept, right? You're putting icons on a screen; they're different shape. But the bottom line is that Apple changed the way people use mobile devices, and everybody had to follow, or they simply would have been out of business. So, you know, I'm not losing any sleep over it.
It doesn't seem quite accurate to say that, oh, poor Apple, it would be so much more successful.
How can they get much more successful?
It's hard to buy that, yet the jury did.
I mean, Apple was on its last legs when Jobs went in there and returning from his exile and holding meetings. And the next thing you know, they're the biggest company in the world.
They're building a $1 billion spaceship.
How can you say they've been, boy, I'd like to be harmed like they have been.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of,
right. Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, if we're going to play a game of what might have been, which is what it appears Apple's trying to do, what might have been if there wasn't any competition? Are you telling me that Apple would have hustled just as hard as they did?
In what way has Apple given
more to its customers because of the competition?
Right.
Well, I think more than that. I think that the fact that there was competition tended to legitimize what Apple was doing. It wasn't just magic that only a few people were going to be able to do. My golly, this is taking over the world. There are other companies in there, too. A lot of us went and got Apple stuff out of sort of gratitude for their vision coming to life in front of us. And I just don't see this. I think they'd much better put their effort into something else than playing these legal games.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, I want to see Apple come up with their next act. I mean, I think it's great that they're improving the operating system and the hardware a little bit every year, but we've talked about this before. What is their next act? What is their next new product that people can start stealing from? But certainly, the war between Android and iOS, one step forward in each direction, one step back sometimes. But well, I'm just not seeing a huge amount of innovation from Apple.
Yeah.
Cedric, you're not enamored of an iWatch.
I just don't believe that it's going to turn out to be big enough to warrant
Apple's kind of. It's going to look like a slave bracelet. It'll be big.
No, I mean big market-wise.
Oh, okay.
How many... Let's imagine Apple comes out with an amazing watch, How much can it expect to sell? A few tens of millions, maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, I tried the Samsung watch, and it's about as good as whoever,
the rest
of the market.
It works. It's got a camera on it.
The design is actually better than I expected.
Yeah.
It's got a few kinks, but okay.
I didn't hate it. I was surprised. I was prepared to hate it.
I still haven't, switched watches.
Yeah, I'm not going to wear it, but I didn't
hate
it.
A Japanese watch whose battery will last 25 years, and that does everything I want in time zones and more and alarms. So people already have watches. I mean, there is no hurt there. There is no fundamental problem to solve. Remember the original iPhone keynote when Steve came on stage and said, "We like the smartphones that are out there. What the problem is, what's down there, the keyboards, and that's what the iPhone was there to solve.
Right.
What's there to solve with your watch? It's fine."
Well, if the fundamental problem that Apple is trying to solve or Samsung is trying to solve is having to take your phone out of your pocket. That is not a multi-billion-dollar problem to solve.
That's exactly the problem.
That's all they're solving.
That's what they're selling.
And don't you think that the next step may be exactly what Xbox is doing?
You talk to the watch and then your phone. But I can talk to my phone without taking it out of my pocket. So I don't know.
That's right.
I really don't want to walk around like this. Like Dick Tracy with my wrist to my lips.
I'm with you. Look, I've got a watch and tells me the time. If I want something more complicated than that, I've got an iPhone.
I'll show you the watch I want. I want the William Shatner watch. Have you seen this on Indiegogo?
Eventually, there is what human beings have discovered as the passages of time. Mm-hmm. Every decade, more or less, has a passage. And it's those passages that I wanted to name our watch.
This is actually quite a beautiful watch. Shatner's signature on the back.
Who cares? You notice it's set to 10:09. Every single watch you see, go through Wired magazine.
No, they're all at 10:09. I don't know why. Why is that?
It's always at 10:09. Well, number one, because it doesn't obscure the logo.
Jerry, you were there when they invented the wristwatch. Was there any... I'm sorry. I can't resist these things. What's nice about it? It's only $400. It could be a lot more expensive.
I'm sorry. It sounded like you said it's only $400.
I did. It has a
only a PS4. I see.
It's a PS4.
It tells the time, you say? Wow.
But it was created by William Shatner. It's dusted with authentic asteroid dust. I kid you not. They dusted it with asteroid dust.
William Shatner looks at every one of them as it comes off the assembly line.
It has a domed sapphire crystal.
Blesses it.
It's engraved Leo, with his signature.
Okay, Leo, I got something I think you're going to be really excited about. There's a company. It's technically a novelty company, but they sell, honest to goodness, gelatin capsules that have filled with 24-karat gold flakes.
Ooh.
So you can literally ish gold. So why don't you buy some of those while you're at it?
Is that true?
Yes, it's true.
How much are they?
I don't know. It's some stupid amount. It's literally just so you can look at the toilet and be like, damn, I'm rich.
I has gold. All right. So this is not. By the way, I just want to point out that this is on Indiegogo, and they've raised $271,924 toward their $75,000 goal.
A lot of people want to poop gold, Leo.
It's multi-layered. Swiss Super Luminova. Ooh.
And it's numbered.
Yeah.
All right. I almost bought it, but now I'm not going to. Thanks to you. You spoiled it. But where can I get those capsules filled with gold?
I don't know. I think I saw it on notsafeforwallet.com or something like
Speaking
that.
Speaking of wallet, Google Wallet is now offering a physical card. And I thought this was kind of interesting.
Crazy? Yeah, I thought it was crazy when I first heard it, but it actually makes some sense. Because it's a way in which you can actually extract your money out of your Google account without having to go to one of the very few merchants that actually takes Google Wallet. So, Leo, if you and I went out to dinner and you're wealthy, I would expect you to pick up the entire bill. But let's say we were to split it.
Hey, I owed you gold, dude.
That's right. I owed you $15. I could use my Google Wallet to transfer the money to you. And then you could go to your nearest ATM and get the money out, or you could go to a store and actually spend it, or you could try to take your Google Wallet and find a store you could spend it in. Good luck finding one. So it actually makes sense, ironically, strangely.
I like it. Not as much as gold pills. But
there they are. I told you.
Oh my goodness.
I told you.
They're 220 millimeters long. They're only $425.
Each?
Oh.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Oh, it was a glittering gold.
Seems dangerous.
Thanks.
No, that's the idea, Jerry.
Would you bring me a camp toilet, please? I need to pay the
I want my gold. I paid $425 for that gold. So I think the Google Wallet physical card is a response to this coin card that has gotten an awful lot of attention for reasons I don't fully understand.
Yeah, you guys apparently last week, from what I saw on Twitter, you guys were saying that there were some security concerns with coin. I think you guys are worried about.
It's just dumb.
You have a Bitcoin?
No, coin.
Oh, coin.
Go to onlycoin.com. The idea is it's a digital device that looks like a credit card, but you tie it via a low-energy Bluetooth to your smartphone, iOS only, I think, for now. And the smartphone has a little scanning dongle that you add to it that you scan all your cards into it. The phone then sends the card information to this black thing, which programs the mag strip on the back so that when you swipe it, you know, you press a button on the front and say, I'm going to use my MasterCard today. And when you swipe it, that's what it charges. You choose what you're going to charge on.
It's just Hootsuite for credit cards,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's good. That's like, an interesting way to sell it. I don't know if they've thought of that. Hootsuite for credit cards?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, look, I don't have time to log into my Twitter and then log into my Facebook and then log into whatever. It's like, whatever. Just let me log into one card. Yeah, post this on Twitter.
I don't know. Yeah. I think if you come up to a merchant and you show them this and say, can I swipe my black card? They're going to say, well, do you have a credit card? And it won't work in France because in France they use chip and pin, right?
Oh, sure.
I mean, first of all,
the first thing that we said here. No, we all have chip and pin for pretty much all of our cards.
Yeah.
American Express switched a couple of years ago. So, the concern I have with coin is there's no signature on the back. They can't even check anything.
Right.
I can swipe your card into my coin and go to a restaurant.
That's the security issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
To be honest, that's what I perceive as a benefit to this. I have two employees who I trust greatly. Because it's like I send off one of my helpers to go off and buy equipment for us to make stuff at Scam Stuff, and it's like it's awkward. They're all like, well, it's not my name on it, but it's my boss, and I need you to.
You live in a country where you guys live in a country where waiters will routinely disappear with your credit card.
Right.
If the waiter has coin, I'd be the waiter. I'd be swiping all day. Yep.
Yeah.
Come on in there. Come to that.
Yeah.
Well, but so what? So what?
I assume there's a mechanism
against that. Our liability... We have no liability.
Well,
if
that's
you
why
do
I
that,
think
then
Visa
you've committed a crime.
That's why Visa and MasterCard may not be too sanguine about this product and may kill it on arrival. The only reason I raise the point at all is because, A, I think Google's responded to this with a Google Wallet. I think they were aware of it. But, B, because this company is asking people for $55, and people are just going to the website, giving them $55, saying, yeah, I'll take it when it's ready.
How thick is this device? I
mean, it's a millimeter. It's like a credit card. It's a millimeter thick.
So it's not a credit card.
Yeah.
You know, the problem with a lot of these wallets, maybe this solves a little bit of a problem, right? Because, you know, you get your American Express and your Visa, your MasterCard. But a lot of these products don't solve a problem that
I don't
really
see
haunts
what the problem
that many
is.
People.
And that's the other reason I raise it, because it's kind of like an iWatch. It's solving a problem that's not a huge, maybe it's a first world problem. It's just not a huge problem. Oh, taking the phone out of my pocket is so hard. Or, carrying four credit cards. I don't know if I can carry all those credit cards.
Well, then you have all your loyalty cards and club cards and whatever cards. So
I don't carry that many.
Actually, I can understand.
I don't know. You can get away with an American Express and a MasterCard or a Visa, and that's all you really need.
Yeah, you shouldn't be carrying 18 credit cards.
I actually, when I travel, I carry one in my suitcase for emergencies.
There you go. That's smart.
My wallet gets stolen.
I carry 5 passports under different names, just in case.
You never know. Leo, you mentioned the iWatch situation. Like, has anyone here, I would never have bought one of these for myself because I'm holding myself out for whatever comes next because I'm not usually a first generation kind of guy. But on his way out, John Tilton bought me, as a thank you gift, he bought me a Pebble, which I am astonished
you
at
like
how much
it.
I absolutely adore it.
You
it's
like
perfect.
It.
Huh. Like there's times I'll leave my phone charging in the other room and I'm up here in the studio down there in the office. A message will come in or somebody will be calling and I'll see it right here on my Pebble. Like once you've experienced that convenience of not having to pull your phone out ever, I'm not only bullish on the idea of iWatches in general, but I'm so bullish that I would not be surprised if Apple decided to leapfrog the watch as an ancillary object to the iPhone and instead went straight to something called like the iCuff, some kind of like permanent, like that's the whole thing.
What about the iCuff link? Or perhaps the iAscot? Maybe an iDickie. I could wear one of those. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the secret behind some of the best websites in the world, websites that never go down because Squarespace is the best hosting ever attached to the best content management software. And because they're tightly integrated, you get a great looking site that's always responsive, always up and running. You can make it look exactly as you want. You start, and by the way, I love it. The Squarespace says, all you have to do is go to our website, squarespace.com, click the Get Started button. You don't need to give us a credit card. For 2 weeks, you can use the run of the place. You'll start with one of their 20 beautifully designed templates. Now, you may say 20, that's not very many, but each and every one can be customized easily. You don't have to be an expert in JavaScript or CSS or HTML. You just drag and drop, point and click your way. And you end up with unique sites. These are all sites designed with the same a template. They all look gorgeous. They all have some very nice features like they're mobile responsive, which means that you can go to a site on an iPhone or look at it on a 27-inch display, and it's going to remold, rearrange itself to look great on that site. In fact, when you upload images to your Squarespace site, their software in the background automatically creates 8 or 9 different thumbnails, so at different sizes, so that your image will look good no matter where it is. It's just this is how it should be. This is well designed by some of the best, smartest people out there, and of course, great support too. It's very easy to use. In fact, you'll find on the Squarespace site they've got free webinars for users. They've got great forums. They've got help, but they also have a 24/7 support team. They just won a Golden Stevie Award for their support, for outstanding support. Now you might say, well, for all of that, that's got to be expensive. It starts at $8 a month. That's for the hosting and the software. And when you buy an annual plan, you'll also get the domain name free and registrations free, and they'll hook it up to your site. Go to $16 a month when you pay annually. They'll have the unlimited plan. This is amazing. You never get a bandwidth bill, no matter how popular your site gets. You can't ever slash dot this site or dig it or twit it. You cannot bring it down. And you'll never pay extra for all those visitors. Success is waiting, you know? It doesn't There's no friction. Unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, unlimited blogs, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. If you are a JavaScript or CSS guru, they've got a developer platform that's beautiful. So you can really customize it or hire somebody if you want. You want to sell stuff for the holiday season? Commerce 2, yes, $24 a month. And they never charge a transaction fee. You get unlimited physical, digital, or services to sell, unlimited pages, storage, bandwidth, and contributors. They'll help you with inventory tracking, tax calculations, shipping, coupon controls. I just think this is empowering people to really build their own business, to build their own website. You deserve to own your place on the web. No one else should own that. You got to, no matter what you do, Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff, you still have to have one place that you point back to that you call your own, your website. This is the place to make it, squarespace.com. It is easy to try, and as I said, no credit card needed, but if you decide you want to pay for it, you want to sign up, use our offer code TWIT11, and we'll give you 10% off your new account. So thank you for supporting This Week in Tech, and try it out, because you're going to love it, squarespace.com. Tom Merritt is here. He has a look at the week ahead. Tom?
Hey, Leo. I took a break from playing with my Xbox One to tell you what's coming up in the week ahead for Tech News Today. Tuesday, November 26th, it's HP's earnings report. Is that boat turning around? Wednesday, November 27th, Yola's first Sailfish OS handset goes on sale. Of course, Thursday, November 28th is Thanksgiving, meaning Friday, November 29th is Black Friday sale day in the United States. It's also the day that XI3's Piston Modular PC launches for $1,000. That's a look at the week ahead. Ooh, back to you, Leo.
I want a piston.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Tom. Hey. Okay, now you know it was pre-recorded.
It's because Dvorak wasn't here to point that out. Hey, Leo, do you have a dog in the race on this FCC saying it's okay to use cell phones on an airplane?
I do. I have a very strong opinion on this, but I'm going to let everybody else talk before I say what actually is going on. But as you know, the FAA recently said it's okay to have your devices on from gate to gate.
Yep.
And now already JetBlue and Delta have freed the people. But in no case did the FAA say you could use your cell phone in flight to make calls or text.
Because that's not their purview, right? That's the FCC.
Well, it's both, but the FAA could say okay, but the FCC also has to approve it. So in response, the FCC has announced they're looking into it.
Right.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think everybody probably agrees what you don't want is the guy sitting next to you yapping on the phone for the whole flight. I mean, it's just simply a question to me of courtesy. I actually liked it when the phones were on the airplanes that were really, really expensive. So you could use them if you wanted to, but hardly anybody did. And they only used them very quickly because they were so expensive.
But the airlines would have to equip planes with special antennas approved by the FAA. And that's to handle a major technical issue, which is you're traveling, 6 or 7 miles high at 600, 700 miles an hour. Yeah. The handoffs from cell tower would actually bring the cell network down.
Right.
So they would solve that by having some sort of equipment in the airplanes. It would only be after the aircraft is above 10,000 feet, not during takeoff and landing. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler said modern technologies can deliver mobile services in the air safely and reliable, and the time is right to review our outdated and restrictive rules. What do you think, Brian? You think there's something going on here?
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't understand this rejection of the idea out of hand. It's, as a child of the 70s, I spent my 20s staring at phones on the back of airplanes.
Yeah, but nobody used them. And if they used them, it was crappy and brief.
And expensive.
Right. Well, very expensive.
And to be honest, that will continue to be the case, even though it won't be expensive in terms of dollars and cents. It'll be expensive in terms of, like, you will have to put up with the ire of everyone around you.
Delta Airlines. Delta did a survey in 2012. 64% of passengers said the ability to make phone calls in flight would have a negative impact on their onboard experience. They hate the idea.
Oh, whatever.
We all hate the idea.
Yes, other. Oh, no. We all hate the people. We all hate the idea of other people using phones. Mm-hmm. But when our daughter goes into an epileptic fit and we need to call the hospital to find out what's going on, suddenly we think that we should have the ability to call. Look, this stuff self-regulates, man. It's like if you have a situation that is so dire that you don't mind putting up with the fact of being that guy on the airplane that everybody's staring at and making nasty faces with, really? If you don't mind the fact that everybody's going to listen in to every word of your conversation, then yes, your conversation is inherently so important that you deserve to have the ability to contact a loved one.
I'm not worried about the person with somebody in the hospital. I'm worried about the businessman who wants to show what a big shot he is.
You know, I tend to agree with you, Brian, because, you know, people don't talk on the phone in restaurants as much as they used to. Like, I go to restaurants a lot.
Correct.
And I'll take a phone call for 10, 20, 30 seconds, but then I'll walk out the door if I really have to chat. And most people do that these days. So maybe there would be self-regulation and people would only use them either very briefly or if extremely important. I mean, that would be an optimistic way to look at the possibility.
I think that's a good way to put it, because I think that yes, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, wasn't that social stigma associated with it. There was no price for the person having a conversation. All he got was to feel important. But nowadays, that's not the case. And nowadays, people are very aware of how they sound to people around them.
You ever take Amtrak?
Yeah, they have a quiet car.
It's terrible. There's a real problem with people talking on the phones on the train.
But they have a quiet car.
They do have a quiet car. That's the response, right? How do you have a quiet airplane? Go ahead, Jerry.
I'm beginning to believe that none of you people have ever lived in Hollywood.
I have.
Why? Is everybody on the phone all the time?
They are not only the even back before cell phones, people would have phones brought to the table
right.
so they could have their big conversations to be heard by all the way across the polo lounge about, no, I won't take that deal.
Right.
You ought to throw $4 more million into it.
Hollywood's
to an empty telephone, but that's unimportant.
Hollywood is where they invented that guy.
Not only that, but
I don't know. Maybe I'm just unlucky, but it is almost inevitably the case that if they allow those dang telephones to be used on the airplanes, I'll be sitting next to that guy, whether I'm first class or steerage.
Yeah,
it'll be that guy next to me, and he'll be sitting there. I once, a long time ago, took the administrator of NASA over to Capitol Hill to meet the minority whip. I was Newt's science advisor then, and the administrator was a good friend. Two associate administrators, political appointees, neither of whom the administrator liked much, decided they had to come with us. We're going, and this is back before cell phones, they used the car telephone to make calls to impress their boss while we're driving across there. I mean, you know, Dan and I talked about it after we got out. I just think the capacity of people to be that guy is a hell of a lot bigger than most of you think.
I agree. I don't think social strictures restrictions are going to have any impact on this.
Jerry, you live right by Jerry's Delicatessen on Ventura Boulevard, don't you, in Studio City?
I do,
and they have phones. They still have phones at the tables?
It still goes on just that way,
Just a regular
phone. What do you need
phone?
A phone at a table for anyway?
I don't know. But they had them last time I was there.
No, this is good to hear because I'm opening up Brian's Diner, in which there are telegraphs at every table.
You can send
a telegraph.
You can use our key to send Morse code at every table. Well, I just
can understand you if you use that.
I rue the day. I dread the day when this is made legal. But I'm hoping that the FCC knows that this is a non-starter with most people. They're going to pretend to pay attention to this and then say, we decided it's not okay.
You know, let me throw something at you, Leo. What would be so wrong with them making it legal but leaving it up to, as they've said the entire time, leaving it up to the airline to decide if they want to do this?
Like, well, that sounds like something the FCC would do, which is basically wash their hands of it and say, oh, it's not our fault.
No,
it's Delta's fault.
But like. For example,
but I would
Virgin
fly
Airlines.
Delta if they advertised, just as in the early days of non-smoking flights,
right?
Non-smoking, non-phoning, I would go on that plane.
Right. Well, but this is what always happens, is that the legislation always lags behind the public's opinion.
So maybe that's a way to create
companies are usually first.
You could have
to jump
the That Guy Airlines full of that guys.
Sure.
And then Delta, where it's nice and quiet.
You know, sure. Actually, you yes. can make in which case it would be worth. Now. So Google in Flight blocks Skype, but they don't block Google Voice.
They block Skype reasonably because I think that's going
to. They don't even try to block Google Voice.
So I wonder why not.
I mean, you can do it if you want.
Because nobody
sometimes
tries.
Sometimes I'll be on the plane and people will call in. I'll get incoming calls. I'll never take them.
Right.
But then I'll text them and say, hey, I'm on a plane. Call back in a few hours.
I think there should be a flight where you get a pill filled with gold at the beginning of the flight. And you're allowed to talk on the phone. They put a phone at you on your tray table. And you just can make any call you want. And I won't
be
on that.
They charge you to use the restroom to issue your gold out.
You have to buy a strainer. Now here's the thing. I'm sorry, that's disgusting. I would like to see them allow texting, but not voice.
Oh, yeah.
How about that? There's a compromise.
That would be wonderful.
All right. Now, Leo, perfect. Understand that what you're doing is you are projecting your wishes onto the world. And yes, the hammer of law is a
What's
very
wrong
convenient
with that? It's
way
my world. I get to project my wishes on it.
Again, my default position is the greatest freedom for everyone. But just understand that when you use those freedoms, there are costs associated with it. And I think that there are significant costs with being the one jerk on a phone who's shouting
not
out.
Not significant enough.
All over
the people who are those jerks like that negative attention. It's
not
like saying, they'll never be trolling on the internet. We'll make sure it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Well, that's an unfair comparison.
That's not unfair. It's exactly right.
Who's going to sue your butt for denouncing him?
So here's the rule. You got it almost right, Brian, but not right. Not fully right. You should be allowed to do whatever you want to do, whatever is privately beneficial without being publicly detrimental. Do you see what I'm saying? This is the first law of the internet from cavebear.com. We interviewed him on Triangulation this week. The burden of demonstrating public detriment should be on those who wish to prevent the private use. In other words, if I want to keep people from using phones on airplanes, the burden is on me to show why it's detrimental. And it needs to provide clear and convincing evidence of public detriment.
See,
would you agree, Brian, that that's a more balanced? Yeah. That's what you're saying.
It's closer. The only thing that it doesn't factor in is the fact that there are different individual carriers of airline service. Yeah. And you might have one carrier that says it is a nonstop disco. You don't even have to sit down for takeoff and landing. It's music and punk rock and anything goes the entire time. And you can choose to fly that plane or not. And then there's another one where it's like, oh, no, you have to buckle your seats for takeoff and landing. You're not allowed to use electronics because we want to be totally safe. And they will cater to their individual audiences. Yeah.
I don't think the FAA is going to allow that.
I can't imagine the FCC is going to allow
that. What was that movie with Snoop Dogg where they had a soul plane, I think it was, where that actually happened?
Soul plane!
You know what I want to outlaw? I want to outlaw people being able to put their seat back so far that it almost breaks my laptop.
Yeah.
I mean, that has happened to me. You know, when I have to fly coach, and you put your laptop on the tray table, and the guy in front of you suddenly lowers their seat really quickly.
They can actually squish the screen.
They can squish it. It's never happened to me, but it has happened.
I've had it come so close where the screen is trapped, and I have to go, whoa, and pull it up.
Exactly, or you hit the back of the seat.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, that's a good idea. I never thought of that.
Yeah, I do that all the time. I hit anything else. You don't want to sit in front of me in a plane.
Basically, we're going to turn flying into a cage match. It's going to be so unpleasant. You're just going to stay home.
It already is unpleasant. What are you talking about?
It's getting worse.
Good news. The good news for your laptop is that actually reclining is going out of fashion. All the new coach classes and the new planes have, seats that either slide in but rarely recline anymore.
Is that true?
So your laptop is safe. Oh, yeah, really. You have now the seats whose width can vary according to how much you paid for a ticket, but these are only prototypes. I think we can all agree on the fact that once we can place calls on a plane, of course, we will all be the a-hole who will just once pick up the phone, call someone, and say, you'll never guess what I'm calling. Where I'm calling
that.
You from.
I did it.
And then I think most of the time we will resort to texts because texting is okay on planes.
I think texting should be fine.
I mean, you guys all remember the first time you used the internet on a plane, you know, when GoGo came around?
Yeah.
I mean, I was just amazed. Yeah. I remember writing a blog post and showing the flight attendant, look, it's already been published. You can see it right on my laptop. It was so amazing.
Yeah.
And now I actually look forward to not always using my laptop.
Isn't that funny?
Actually getting some sleep.
I can sleep.
Yeah.
Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. You know who sleeps a lot? Postal Service employees. And if you'd like to keep them sleeping and not interrupt their naps, you might want to be using Stamps.com. Actually, I'm being facetious. I love the post office. In fact, one of the things that the post office does really well is every day except Sunday, a mail carrier comes to my door, brings me stuff, picks up stuff. Stamps.com keeps the best part of the post office, that free pickup and delivery, but does everything else at your desk. You can print your own legal postage from your computer and your printer. You do not need a postage meter. You do not need special inks, just Stamps.com and your inkjet or laser printer. You could buy postage on Stamps.com. You'll get discounts you don't even get at the post office because they would love it. They would love you to use Stamps.com. There's even a button on the Stamps.com website. You can push the button and say, have the mail carrier come and make another pickup today. And they'll do it. Stamps.com. It'll print right on your envelopes with your company logo, return address. It'll pull the sender's address from your QuickBooks, your address book. If you sell on Amazon, eBay, Etsy, or PayPal, or other sites, it'll pull addresses from there. It'll fill out the international mailing forms, which is really nice. Literally everything you can do at the post office, you can do right from your desk with Stamps.com. I want you to try it right now. This is a good time. Because the post office is just filled with amateurs at the holiday season. If you do mailing for your business, you don't want to waste time with that. Go to Stamps.com right now. Click the radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner that says, heard us on a radio or podcast. Enter in on our offer code, which is TWIT. And then you're going to get a $110 no-risk trial offer, $55 in free postage. You can use it over the first few months of your Stamps account. Free digital scale. You just pay shipping and handling on that. I think it's $5. Not very much. $5 supply kit and a four-week trial of Stamps.com. Cancel in that first 4 weeks. You pay nothing. The scale is yours to keep. You just pay the shipping and handling on that. Stamps.com. There is no better way to do your mailing. We do it here all the time, and we love it. Stamps.com. We thank you for their support of This Week in Tech. Let's wrap it up with a couple of quick stories. Swansea, Massachusetts. The police department there gets bit by the CryptoLocker virus, encrypts all the data on their hard drives, says you have 72 hours to pay $750 and get your data back. They did it.
Did they get their data back?
Yes. The police department spokesman says we were never compromised. Except that malware infected our system.
Those were the honest crooks.
Police departments, of course, all over the world are saying if you get a crypto locker on your system, don't, whatever you do, pay the money, pay the ransom, mm-hmm. because that just encourages them. However, if you're one of those people that gets bit and it's the only way to get your data back.
No, CryptoLocker is the perfect virus because it has that credible threat. It's like they really don't care. There was zero cost put into infecting your computer. There's zero cost to them destroying all of your data.
Right.
All they're doing is locking it up, and if it gets lost, all that does is bolster their reputation as being a credible threat. So it's like CryptoLocker terrifies the hell out of me. And to be honest, I don't blame this particular department for spending the money because I guarantee
either.
You the $750 was way less than right. the cost of reconstructing that data after the fact.
Well, they probably should have had a backup. I hope they have a backup.
Yeah. If only there was another sponsor on this week's episode.
I know. This is the one show they should have
mentioned.
The word of the year, according to the Oxford Dictionaries, is, any bets, any thoughts?
Selfie, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously.
Selfie.
Everybody's doing it. I have never done a selfie.
Lies.
What? Actually, my whole career is a selfie, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
all I do.
If I'm not mistaken, we kicked off this week's NSFW with a selfie from the archives. I want to say 2010 or whatever, after you got a hot like jalapeno peel or some kind of thing.
Oh yeah,
some
that was a selfie.
Facial.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've never twerked on the show. I don't think.
Better
it's
not
good
either.
Enough.
Not while I'm on the show, you better.
It could be worse. The word of the year could have been twerk. Maybe next year.
Some people use their phones as mirrors, right? You can actually see yourself.
You can comb your hair in your phone.
Yeah. Except for it's the opposite.
Yeah.
Speaking of selfie, I'm going to go ahead and put into the chat a link to what might have been the original selfie, the first selfie in space from HuffPost Science.
This is kind of cool.
Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah.
in 1966.
Wow.
Taking a selfie of himself above in orbit I assume in orbit over planet Earth. How amazing is that?
It's a very cool selfie. Where and over his shoulders. Yeah, I mean that is a selfie because you're saying here I am. Here's the Earth. You won't believe where I'm calling you from.
Yeah, and by the way, way to go, Earth. Nice photo bomb. Trying to jump in on that.
I love Buzz Aldrin. That is the best picture. Wow, is that great.
Wow.
Isn't that awesome?
That was my favorite interview when I got to interview Buzz Aldrin. It was like such a trip.
Yeah.
To actually meet this guy.
Yeah.
I don't usually drop names, but that was one name that was a name worth dropping.
I got his autograph. I don't usually ask for autographs, but I did get it. I've never talked to Neil Armstrong. I'm sad to say I never got to talk to him. I would have loved to have interviewed him as well. But, yeah, what a guy. What a guy.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Let's see. Turntable FM shutting down. That's kind of, I mean.
Yeah, that actually bummed me out for all the publicity that it got.
It really was cool, but I always wondered how they got away with it. Basically, the idea was you could play your own music collection to people listening and then trade off DJs. Apparently, there is a Turntable Live platform. That's where they're going to focus on live events. Don't really understand how that works.
Well, there's another company called Stage It that does a similar thing, and they actually talked to me about like doing live magic shows or whatever.
Yeah.
But the idea is if you're somebody that normally would go to your local coffee shop and attract 35 people and then hopefully get $3 per person, well, guess what? It's a lot easier to attract 35 people for a live concert.
It's called Google
over
Hangouts.
The internet. Yes, exactly. Okay. So the idea is it's a platform, at least with Stage It. I can't speak to Turntable FM's live stuff, but with Stage It, it's you've got a tip jar. People could come in. They're like, oh, I love getting this concert one-on-one with you, and you're listening to us. That's amazing. And then, you know, here's $5. And it's like you can make the same $500 that you would make locally, but you're able to do it globally.
That's cool. Yeah. Warner Brothers admits to issuing bogus takedowns. And says, hey, nothing you can do about it. So apparently, this is, by the way, was revealed in the lawsuit against Hotfile.com. The Warner Brothers hired a guy, an employee, who just issued a bunch of DMCA takedown requests on stuff that was not even Warner Brothers stuff, just to harass them.
Yeah.
And Warner Brothers admitted it. And they said, and there's nothing much you can do about it. And there isn't, apparently.
I mean, they're right. That's the way the law is written.
Wow.
Yeah.
We get DMCA takedowns all the time from companies in Brazil and so forth. And I can't really understand it. None of their content is on it. It's YouTube almost always for some reason. And it just drives me nuts. We talked before about the Johnny Ive and Mark Newson auction at Sotheby's for a product red. It happened last night. And you might be amazed to hear what some of these things sold for, all of it to benefit Bono's Red charity to end AIDS in Africa. Johnny Ive, for instance, designed a lot of these were just things that they liked. For instance, a pair of solid rose gold Apple ear pods sold for $461,000.
Wow.
At that point, it's definitely not about the
hardware. Oh, no. It's rich people. It's rich people saying, hey, you know, this is a good cause.
And you can't even swallow them.
And I can swallow my headphones and poop gold.
There you go.
So there's that.
Stein. Leo, that's horrible.
Now, we were talking about the Johnny Ive one-of-a-kind Leica camera that he designed. That sold for $1.8 million.
Wow.
They were hoping for $750,000. It definitely pulled in more than they expected. And this is the one I bid on, and I'm so glad I got it. I know you're thinking, gals, the Christian Louboutin boots. But Apple Mac Pro, the bright red new Mac Pro, $977,000.
Oh, congrats. You got that
one.
Yeah,
don't try to swallow it. Just, it'll be on the set. I thought it was worth every penny.
Free Apple Care?
Free Apple Care. No, I don't think they're throwing in Apple Care. Pretty amazing, though. $461,000 for a pair of gold earbuds.
What do you do with a $500,000 computer after it's 4 years old and you know, kind of obsolete? You just keep it on the shelf?
I wonder if anybody will use this.
No.
I mean, will it ever get turned on?
I doubt it. I mean, it kind of doesn't matter. It's like the beautiful object is the lesson right there.
Right.
You know, it's like...
Yeah. It's really pretty.
It makes more sense than a gold-encrusted cell phone that Neiman Marcus sells.
Yeah. I think this is just anyway,
diamond
for a great cause. And yeah. Congratulations to Johnny and Mark, who raised a lot of money. Major League Baseball and the NFL say, if that Aereo thing continues, we're not going to go. You're going to lose the Super Bowl and the World Series. We're not going to let you watch it on free TV anymore. They're petitioning.
Good.
Yeah, they're petitioning the U.S. Supreme Court to listen or adhere the broadcaster's challenge of the legality of Aereo. Aereo is the weird Barry Diller startup where he has dime-sized antennas in a city, and then you can rent one of them and watch the city's local broadcast television anywhere on your iPad. If copyright holders...
We talked holders, about this.
Yeah, we talked about it a
we
lot.
We talked about this on frame rate. We talked about this. And specifically, our take was that, number one, if they did leave broadcast, neither of those institutions would lose anything. I mean, they would go on to make more money with their own individual networks.
No, they're saying they're going to go to paid cable. They'll go to ESPN or TNT, where a lot of baseball and football already is, by the way. You know, Thursday Night Football's on ESPN. Here's my issue with this. They're freaking double dipping. Are there not ads? Do they not show these things for free in New York City? Can you not watch it? Do they not make money on the ads?
Yeah.
They also want retransmission fees?
Exactly.
Come on, guys. Let's not be greedy.
The business model changed, Leo. I mean, the business model was once only advertising, in which case I would think the networks would have been jumping for joy over anything that could increase their viewership. But now the business model has changed to transmission fees and advertising. And, of course, the aerial folks aren't paying those fees.
So. Business model, another word for... greed in this case.
I didn't say that.
They made plenty of money. They get a lot of money with the, you know, their fees. I just think this is absurd.
It's also a control issue. I think companies want to feel like they can control what happens to their product. And if, you know, suddenly somebody else gets to make money by rebroadcasting without permission,
There's rebroadcasting. I mean, if you took the signal and you put it over the internet, that would be one thing. But what you're doing is you're renting these antennas. I understand it's semantics, but it's also the fact.
What was that company in Silicon Valley that would rent you a DVD player and they would deliver the DVD over the internet?
Right.
And they got shut down.
Zadiva.
Yeah, Adiva.
Yeah, no, okay, but keep in mind, Zadiva was the problem that shut down Zadiva is that they actually had the hardware, but they were definitely retransmitting without authorization. Whereas the Aereo is in a very different position because what they're doing is renting specific antennas. There's never more than one antenna being used by one individual at a time, and we've already seen precedent established by our friends over at Slingbox, where it's like you are allowed to access your own antenna over the internet, and so
but the difference with Aereo is in a little bit different place. You actually have your own cable subscription or whatever, or broadcast or whatever it is that Slingbox is connected to. Whereas with the Aereo, again, I'm not defending and I'm not taking a position on this. I'm just trying to, you know, say there are some differences I think between the Slingbox and the Aereo situation. But not
legally, because Slingbox allows you to access your distribution service of choice, which you have paid for. And that's exactly what they do with Aereo. You have paid for one individual antenna that's yours. Mm-hmm. And now, granted, none of this says that Aereo is necessarily worth the $8 a month that they're charging. But the fact is they've gone extraordinarily out of their way to make sure that they're in compliance with the letter of the law. So what's in discussion right now is whether or not they're in compliance with the spirit of it.
And this is why you should watch Frame Rate, because this is the meat of the matter that you discussed, Tom and Brian. Tom Merritt, Brian Brushwood do Frame Rate. When do you do Frame Rate?
5 p.m. Central on the Twit Network right here.
You just read that off the chat room.
On Monday.
I did. Ken from Chicago, who's one of our biggest fans.
Twit.tv/FR. Hey, we're out of time. I do want to thank you all. What a great show. Jerry Pournelle, you're the best. JerryPournelle.com. Anything you want to plug?
Well, if you haven't read Star Swarm, go read it. It's a good book.
That's a good plug. We don't often get best-selling authors plugging their platinum albums on the show, so I'm glad to hear it. Star Swarm is a young adult, right?
Yes. Well, it's young adult to adult. It's like Heinlein's Juveniles.
You got to read it. And there, by the way, you can get an audio, hardcover, paperback, or Kindle. It's all there. On Amazon, Star Swarm by Jerry Pournelle. Thank you, Jerry. Always a pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate it. In fact, you should just, everybody just buy every one of Jerry's books. Because there, you will be, Lucifer's Hammer, The Moten God's Eye, Footfall, The Gripping Hand, Inferno, Fallen Angels, Escape from, you just read them all. Just read them all.
I love that.
You will, well, and so will you. Mr. Larry Magid is at larrysworld.com and, of course, on CBS Radio all the time. Connectsafely.org if you've got kids online. Good place to go.
And Leo, if I can mention, if you go to saferinternetday.us, we have this new campaign called One Good Thing, and I think people are going to love this. What we want to hear about is something good that you're using tech for that's going to improve the world. Whatever it is, it could be something simple like taking a picture of a dirty lake on your mobile phone and organizing a cleanup campaign. It could be improving the internet. We want to take these One Good Things. You can get them, put them on saferinternetday.usa or on Twitter or whatever. And we want to bring those to Washington, D.C. on Internet Safety Day, February 11th, 2014. It's not going to be about safety. It's going to be about all the positive things that young people and adults are doing online. So let us know your one good thing, and we're going to spread the word widely about what people are doing out there that's going to benefit mankind using technology instead of complaining about bullying and all the negative crap.
That's good. I like it. Something positive.
Something positive for a change.
If it weren't for the internet, I wouldn't know about those gold pills you could swallow.
That's right. Those are definitely one good thing. We'll be sure to feature that in Washington.
Would you?
Yeah, yeah. Tell it to Congress.
I think the Senate would love to know about that.
Yeah. But why not invest government money in it?
Maybe they could take Fort Knox, grind it up, put it in a little tablet.
That's right, yeah.
Brian Brushwood, Framerate, NSFW, what else you got?
Oh, look, I don't know about you, Leo, but I'm having the hardest time as we approach this Christmas season trying to figure out what to get my friends.
Oh, I mean, Brian, have you heard about scamschoolstore.com?
Oh, you mean scamstuff.com?
Oh, I mean that one. Yeah, yeah.
It's like I've got some friends that I want to spend about 10 bucks on, yeah, and other friends that I want to spend 30 bucks on. And guess what? I found out that you can get the Rogue's Flask. What's the Rogue's Flask? It's an 8-ounce flask with a freaking shot glass built into it.
Freaking shot glass built in.
Hieroglyphs that tip you off how to do a whole bunch of tricks, and also the Scam School book. It's all at scamstuff.com. Look, man, I'm really, really excited with what's going on. We may do one more sale like around December 1st or whatever, but we got these bulk deals. Like, take a look at this was designed by Brant Hughes, who is the greatest national treasure I've ever had after Chad. The privilege to work with.
Of course.
It's amazing. He designed this whole flask, and those symbols around the edges are crib notes to do a bunch of Scam School tricks so that you can pull, you know, shenanigans on your friends to mess with them. Anyway,
I gotta say, though, whenever I am I'm wearing handcuffs and a straitjacket underwater, I'm glad I bought the Rogue's Ring.
Yeah, the Rogue's Ring allows you to escape from police-issued handcuffs. It's got a built-in shim right there and also a serrated edge so you can get out of zip ties.
Illegal in 48 states, ladies and gentlemen. But if you live in one of the two states in the United States where it is legal, please, it's half off right now at scamstuff.com.
I love you, Leo LaPorte.
Son, are you wearing a Rogue's Ring? Look at that.
Dude, they'll never know.
They'll never know.
And by the way, you'll notice there's different symbols on the Rogue's Ring for another 20 or so Scam School effects. It's crib notes all over you.
This is good. So presumably somewhere it explains what those cryptic hieroglyphics mean.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. We've got a video that walks you through all this stuff.
It's just a reminder.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's you're like, oh, I remember it was something to do with numbers, and I forgot how it went.
About an airplane?
And it's like it's all there. To be honest, it's all probably. But
sure.
Honest,
how would they know? They think it's a ring. They don't know it's a shim designed to escape police handcuffs. How would they know?
Al-Qaeda listening, watching.
Unless they watch the show.
I mean, they watch you. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna say that I've made it past the TSA wearing all these devices, but I'm definitely gonna say that I made it past the TSA wearing all these devices.
Wow.
You might have to get on a flight with you.
We also, so scamstuff.com, help Brian support his family and help you get out of jail free. It's a great, it's a win-win.
I like your style, Leo.
Win-win.
The get out of jail free card.
It works. We also want to thank Cedric Ingrand of Plenacren for joining us. Always a pleasure, Cedric. Thank you for staying up late.
No
Oh, sure, no problem. It's like, oh, it's 2 a.m. here. Are you coming to the web in Paris in December?
We were going to go, and I've had to, I'm sad to say I told Loic I can't this year because my liver can't take it. No, I'm going to skip it this year, but maybe next year, because it is one of the most wonderful things. A lot of fun. You're going to be there?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Le Web.
Obviously.
Check it out. Thank you all for being here. We do the show every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2300 UTC on twit.tv. Please watch live, but if you can't, no problem. You can get on-demand audio and video after the fact at twit.tv, our website, or wherever podcasts are aggregated. If you'd like to join the hardy few who like to sit on these extremely uncomfortable chairs in my presence for 2, 3, sometimes 4 or 5 hours, you can do that, too, by emailing us. Just go to tickets@twit.tv, email us, let us know you're coming. We'll put an uncomfortable chair out for you. And they're really bad, aren't they? Yeah.
And it's free.
But it's free. Really, we got to get better chairs. I'm so sorry. We had a company meeting last week for our benefits program, and I sat in the thing for half an hour. I thought, oh, my God, I'm making people suffer. This is my ass is killing me. And on that note, another twit. And that's the most reluctant applause I have ever heard in my life.
All right, Leo, let me give you a little bit of advice.
Yeah.
Here's what you do. Just say the exact same line,
okay.
Only end with this.
Okay, that's a magician's trick. So you're saying I don't think I can stand up.
No, you can't. You can't. Wait.
Can I do this?
Another twit is in the can, and then just hands up.
Hands
up.
Okay, let's try it again. Okay. Another twit is in the can.